But yeah, no, like even the ow, all that shit. I'll do it, you know? It's fun.
Welcome to the Negative World Podcast, a podcast about video games by the Nintendo fans at negativeworld.org. We are recording this on December 16th, 2011. I am your absentee host, Guillaume, and with me today I have...
Dr. Finkelstein, also known as Steven.
This is Roy Koopa 64. You can call me Eric.
And this is Sir Master Sephiroth. You can call me Sam.
Thank you, Dr. Finkelstein, Steven, for taking over the podcast for two episodes.
No problem.
Very much appreciated. And you did a really good job, I thought.
I'm keeping my promise of helping you with this podcast about 10 months later than I made the promise. But life is different now, and I can be more of a part of it again.
Awesome. Yeah. Yeah, and okay, second thing I want to say, yeah, like I was just taking a little break. Thanks for the people, all two of you on Facebook or Twitter who asked, where's Guillaume? I wasn't gone forever, and now I'm back. And in the future, probably that Steven and I are going to alternate podcasts. We're going to be alternate the hosting, and that's going to be a lot of fun. And I am not going anywhere. No, sir. Not ever.
Good to hear.
So today we have a couple of topics. Dr. Finkelstein, what are you going to talk to us about?
Well, I'm going to talk to you first about Pushmo. That's the game that I've been playing. But after that, we're going to talk about just some wintry kind of snow levels and themes in games.
Awesome. Eric, what's your topic going
to
be?
How important is it for a video game series to stay true to its roots? And for my now playing, I've been mostly playing Mario Kart 7.
Awesome. And Sam?
Okay, so my topic is what remakes would you like to see? What franchises need rebooting? And who has already done it well? And for my now playing, I'm going to be talking about Rocksmith for the PS3 and the Game Boy Advance Ambassador games.
Awesome. And as for myself, I'm going to talk about Rayman Origins because no one else is talking about it. And for my topic, we're going to be talking about Nintendo's quality assurance a little bit. We had a topic recently on the negativeworld.org boards that challenged my views, my long-held beliefs, that have shaken my faith, really, in Nintendo's QA. And yeah, we're going to talk about that a little bit.
I don't know if you guys heard, but a little gem called Pushmo came out recently. And, you know, on the eShop right now, it even says that IGN states that it's the best downloadable title Nintendo's ever produced or something like that. So they're even using that as an advertising point. But it truly is pretty amazing. I didn't even hear about it until, I think, the day it came out, actually, that morning. I didn't hear about it prior, and so it was quite a surprise, and I was a little skeptical if I would enjoy it, but it's blown me away, and I've been addicted to it for the last week. So the general story of it is that there's this old chubby man and this, you know, I guess younger chubby guy. They run into each other, and then there's this little brat who's been pushing babies into a wall with blocks. I mean, it's convoluted. It's a little weird. It's pointless, though. That's not what's important about the game. The gameplay is... there's a wall of just blocks, you know, like sprites almost, and you pull them out one by one, although they can be collected in groups, and you can pull them out three stages, depending on what's underneath your feet, you know. So if you pull out one platform three stages and then you step on that, you can only pull out the next one too, because your body takes up the third. So there's this puzzle game of sliding out essentially like drawers or something. You climb up to the top of the sprite or whatever you're trying to do to open up and collect the little baby that got trapped by the douchebag. So it sounds kind of weird story-wise. The gameplay sounds maybe almost simplistic, but it is very, very challenging. And Oh, it's an intense amount of fun. There's, I don't know exactly how many levels. They only tell you the level number when you're playing the level, so I'm looking at it right now and it doesn't tell me how many, but I played through the main campaign, got through every single level of that, and then there's a little bit of bonus content, which is totally worth it. And yeah, I mean, it's really challenging. At first, it's very easy, and you get kind of, you know, that sense of like, okay, is this going to get harder? I don't need to be explained. A ladder has worked the same way since Chutes and Ladders. You know, it's kind of an obvious thing. But they get really challenging pretty quickly, and I have definitely spent a half hour on a puzzle only to close the DS and come back and spend another, you know, 20 minutes on it. You know, you step away and you suddenly, when you come back, you get it. Pretty much anything in the 4 or 5 star rating as far as challenge is, yeah, that's the one where I'm going to be taking multiple sessions just to solve it. The 3s are really good, and luckily by the first maybe 80 or 90 puzzles, which I know sounds like a lot, but it's not really that much. Once you get past that point, the challenge is up there for each puzzle afterwards. It's just a really wonderful game, and there's a mix of, it's not all like just walls of random shapes like mosaics. Every couple of worlds, there's these things called murals and deluxe murals, and they're like, you know, we've got a castle here, an ostrich, and you know, they're pretty cool. They're pictures. It's pretty entertaining to see the image and kind of manipulate that. But what's really cool, a few of the levels or worlds are based around Nintendo, because this was a internally developed product. They were able to use like Nintendo sprites. You know, you've got like Link or a Goomba or a Bullet Bill, and you're climbing up these guys. And what amazed me the most was simply how 20 years later, 25 years later, these sprites are being used in such a creative new way. It's kind of impressive that, you know, something that was just 16 by 16 blocks can be so not only nostalgia-inducing, but ridiculously fun in a whole new way. As a big Nintendo fan as I am, it's total fan service. I love, you know, climbing up these characters. And luckily, you know, it's not just like a set of 5 or 10. There's quite a few Nintendo-themed puzzles that are really, really fun. And two of them, I'll tell you which ones. Right now, I'm really stuck on Raccoon Mario and Boo, which are later ones. So then it's really good. One last thing I guess I got to say about it is the graphics are actually really nice. They're simple, kind of cel-shaded looking, but there's, you know, detail there. And I was a little worried before purchasing how the 3D effect would look. I mean, not that I necessarily need that for everything I buy from now on from the 3DS shop, but I want my games to use the 3D effectively, especially after Super Mario 3D Land used it so well. And I find that this game actually almost requires it sometimes because, well, first of all, it's very good. It just looks very clean. The bright colors don't ever have that weird ghosting effect that happens in Ocarina of Time 3D. Or like Pilot Wings had that problem too. But the 3D is very clean. And sometimes I'll turn it off to save battery. But you're looking at this wall of blocks and you're jumping up and down, rerouting yourself, backtracking. You almost realize, okay, wait, what do I got to do? When you slip the 3D back on, you realize, oh, I can move this block out one more. And so it's actually really engaging in that way. So if you can't see the 3D, you can still probably beat these just fine, but the 3D does assist quite well. And I think it's another great example of the 3D actually being a useful gameplay element. But all in all, it's $7.99 or $6.99. I'm sorry, $7 at the 3DS shop, the eShop. And it, just like everyone's saying, it is truly worth every penny. I think there's over 200 puzzles total, and then you can actually make your own and send them to your friends or share them online with QR codes, and it works flawlessly and quick. It's one of the most polished packages I've seen Nintendo dish out in a while.
This game sounds a little bit like Catherine in the way you were describing it. Is there any similarity to the game?
I have no idea how Catherine plays. I've heard of it, but I've never actually played it or seen it really, but I've heard other people reference that. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to say yes. But yeah, I mean, Catherine was for PlayStation 3, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
There's most of the action takes place in the real world, but there's a dream world where you climb up blocks, and the character like moves the blocks out to make better pathways towards the top. And it sounds kind of like what you're describing here in Pushmo.
Yeah, that's actually the whole thing. So if Catherine has more gameplay than that, then Pushmo is like just that section of Catherine.
Yeah, the rest of the gameplay is actually just drama and texting, stuff like that.
Okay, then yeah, then it's like the block pushing Catherine, but Catherine has like a darker tone to it, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, so this obviously is very much bright colors, very Nintendo happy.
Also, you don't have a time limit, right?
No. And that's another good thing. I was like, in the Macross games, for instance, I do like the time limit because that adds to the challenge, especially for the replayability. But you can replay these levels just, and I mean, once I've gotten to level 200, I forgot how I solved level 50, so I can go back and challenge myself again. And honestly, like I said, 30 minutes at a time, sometimes taking 2 30-minute segments to solve these things. There's no time limit. And what's also cool is that, like, I was sitting on, you know, working on Raccoon Mario for a while, and I didn't want to progress until I finished that puzzle. I don't want to skip puzzles and have to go back. But it gives you the option to. After a while, the little pause button or the pause icon will flash. And if you go to it, it'll say skip to next puzzle. So it allows you to skip after you've tried it for a while if you want to just come back to it later and just try something fresh. So that's really cool because it doesn't lock you into... You still have to unlock the levels in succession, but you can skip them if you really have a hard time. One last thing I guess I'll say is that the strategy... You pick up the strategy pretty quickly. But the thing about Raccoon Mario is that there's no damn platforms for me to step on. Like, I just stare at the sprite for 5 minutes trying to plan everything out, you know? Okay, I need to pull out this entire chunk of blocks, which will later be a staircase for me, but right now it's obstructing me. I can pull it all out, but there's nowhere to pull it out. So it gets very confusing, and it's amazing, like I said, how these sprites get used in such a way. But absolutely a must-buy. I really believe that. I mean, if you like puzzle games at all, then buy it. Because I, especially Picross games, because I like that kind of methodical problem-solving, and this game is all about it. The only complaint I do have is pretty much the music is the same. It's just one track, and I often play with it off. Because I like the song, but I'll play while watching TV or other things, and I'd rather just listen to something else.
You know, the Professor Layton games, I can't have the music playing in the background anymore. Yeah. It's just always the same one, and if you're stuck on a puzzle, it can get really, really grating.
Yeah, no, I agree. I've only played two of them, but I absolutely agree.
I've only played the first one, but I love the song. I don't know why. I could hear it all day.
Will you love it for 4 games, though?
Probably not.
Yeah.
All right, so Eric, why don't you... tell us about your game.
Well, I guess as most of you may also be playing Mario Kart 7. I haven't been playing it mostly single player, trying to get all the trophies on the cups, finishing the 50, 100, 150, and played a little bit online. Everything about the game so far, I've really enjoyed it. I've heard a lot of discussion about whether the item management is out of balance and everyone has a hatred for the blue shell, but you can play the game, and there's been good discussion about whether you can use the items more strategically in this game than in previous Mario Kart games. What I do like is how you can unlock all the custom parts for your car as you play through, even like the simple mode, the 50cc, or going to 100 and then 150. And I believe you can also unlock all the parts as you play online by collecting the coins. So compared to all the previous Mario Kart games, I'm really happy with this one. And the addition of the community feature, which we have one set up on Negative World, makes it really easy to just jump in with friends, and you don't have to play with strangers, because I don't think there's been a lot of cheating so far, but there, people have already discovered glitches, and that kind of stuff just, you know, ruins the games for a lot of people. But yeah, Mario Kart 7 has a lot of great new features, like the underwater, the glider, and the physics of that feels great when you use the circle pad. It's one of the best new uses of that controller. Overall, I really like it. So
I'm just going to add, you mentioned the glitches, and I guess there's no snaking yet or anything like that, but one bummer is that in the Woohoo Island,
loop.
Yeah, in the Woo, there's a glitch where, I think in both of them actually, where if you fly off the edge into the water or into a, you know, no drive zone, then it sets you back up way ahead of the track. And the way that this has started bumming me out is that I was playing the ghosts, and it's really cool that you can play against 7 ghosts at once, but now you can't beat 3 of them or 4 of them because they use that glitch. So in those particular levels, I did a 7 ghost race, and I raced like a badass. And yeah, but I still lost by a lot because those guys, I literally watched them drive off into the water. And then
Right. What
am I going to do? Because I'm not going to cheat. That's just, I don't want to mess up my own time trials. You know, I don't even want to try it and save it because it'll just piss me off to see that again. So that's a bummer. But I mean, people will play as they'll play and they'll exploit. But it doesn't ruin the experience for me, but it just tarnishes it a little.
Right. And so far, I don't think that's been exploited too much. And you're right, as long as you're just enjoying the game, I don't think it's a big deal.
In our Negative World community that we've got, look, we got like a billion of those things now. Nobody really does, you know, uses it. So in our own little world, especially with the addition of the community's feature, which is really nice, like you were saying, we can keep that away. You know, we can keep the cheaters at bay because we can just play with the people that we want to play with.
How does this game compare to previous Mario Karts, especially the DS and the Wii one?
Personally, I find that Mario Kart Wii is a little bit more fun. But I still haven't put my finger on why yet. Mm-hmm. I think it's perhaps like I like the wider tracks, actually. Mm-hmm. And I like having 12 people. And I'm not sure, but I think that when you get hit by items, it's a little less punitive. I'm pretty sure that the time that you have, you know, like you can get back up quickly on your feet or on your wheels. you can just like, yeah, okay, you get hit by a shell, but like pretty quickly you're going to get going again. And I don't know what they did, but I feel like in this one, like there's a delay before you even start accelerating and like before you even start moving. Like a lot of times, like I'm actually like going backwards after getting hit, or I'm just sliding off the freaking Rainbow Road. And like there's nothing you can do. Like you can't start going quickly.
It's like you lose your momentum so much compared to the previous one, right?
Yeah, you lose it more, and it actually, like, sometimes, yeah, I totally, like, go backwards for some reason, because I'm on the slope.
In a way, that's kind of neat, though. I mean, that you're not just going to plant there when you're on a slope. Like, on Mushroom Gorge, that happens to me a lot. I would say I happen to get blue shells right before the mushroom bumps, you know? And that's a very curved piece of track, and I've noticed myself falling off that way, or, I mean, it's most... Hopefully this is the use of the word correctly, egregious, when you're falling off a track at that point. That's kind of a bummer, but I don't think it's necessarily anything worse than the Wii one. I actually have the opposite opinion of you. I like the tighter tracks and the 8 characters. I think it's a little less hectic in the sense of, like, for lack of a better word, item rape. I don't know. I have noticed, though, the bouncing. Like, I don't need a big Bowser character to knock my ass over because a banana is going to somehow do it. But I don't know, I think Guy and I are just in two different camps. Because I'm liking this one a lot. I like it as much, if not maybe a little bit more than the Wii one, but I think it feels a lot more control-wise like the Wii one, which I really appreciate because it's a little hard for me to go back to the DS gameplay. I was playing that just a few weeks ago, and I got used to it, but the drifting is a little different, and like Double Dash, I can't even go back and play without having to just relearn everything because it's so different. So the fact that I've been playing Mario Kart Wii for, you know, years now, and I've been playing it a lot in the past year, it's nice to be able to play that experience on my handheld and not have to reteach myself how to play Mario Kart.
What do you guys think of the track design? I really like the different shortcuts and different paths you can take depending on your skill with the glider and going underwater, right?
They're best yet, I think.
Yeah.
And I'm curious to see how they're going to make these into retro tracks in the future because they are designed so much for the glider in the water. I mean, I guess they can just block off the water, but like Wario's Shipyard is one of my favorite new tracks because you're just winding in and out and you're banking and it's just beautiful design.
The 3D really pops out on that Wario's level, especially when you're taking that really tight turn and it looks like you're going downhill and it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the track design is pretty solid. A lot of the times though, they put the accelerator, like the boost pads outside the track. And so like if you want to get them, like you don't actually achieve anything. Like if you were taking tighter turn, you pretty much end up where the boost pads would get you anyway.
But what that helps with, I think, is people who aren't good at drifting. So I mean, I don't see it as so much of a negative. And then on some tracks, it is on the outer skirts of the track, but it's also a risk zone because you can fly off. But I mean, yeah, I know what you're saying.
Yeah, and there's benefits too. I mean, if you're going on the outer side, there's always that little ramp that you can use to boost off. Or if you have a tight pack of racers, then it's a way to get split off of the group and let them fight over the items while you're cruising along. So it's pretty well designed, I think.
And I think we really have to mention the amazing Rainbow Road. I love what they've done with it. You know.
Yeah.
I mean, for one, it's just really cool. It's just not a rainbow-colored track anymore. It's got a lot more oomph to it. But also, I like the inclusion of these single-track races where there's three tiers to it.
Yep.
And I know that's Rainbow Road and then the other two Woohoo Island ones. But
right.
I really appreciate that. I wouldn't mind seeing that more in the future. Though the only downside of that is you can't set traps for subsequent laps. But in this game, actually, I tend to watch bananas disappear in front of my eyes constantly. So the items don't stay on the track the entire time, which is kind of a bummer. Although maybe it hasn't in the past. One thing I wanted to ask you guys about these tracks too is, how do you guys like the Woohoo Island inclusion at all? Because I know that Miyamoto has been talking about for years about how he wants to include that island into all sorts of games. It's a character, it's not an island or a location, but it's an actual character that's going to be used in various ways. And I thought it was very cleverly used.
Yeah, but I don't really think it's really anything special. I mean, I'm not feeling like, oh, this is it's the old tired Woohoo Island yet, again, because it doesn't really feel like you're on the same path that you were taking on, like, in Wii Fit or in Pilot Wings.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like, they made a kart course on there. Like, it's completely different.
Right.
But also, like, I don't feel like it's really got that much of a personality. Yeah, there's some traffic, but there's way less traffic than in many previous tracks and previous games that had traffic on them. And you don't really see the houses, or maybe I'm just not paying attention enough, but I don't feel like it's that charming or it's that impressive.
It does seem a little out of place because compared to the rest of the fantastical Mario settings, you have this realistic setting that you've seen in previous games. I do think it has some variety to the game, and because the way they added the Miis, well, they did that in Mario Kart Wii as well, but I think it does combine and gives a different feeling.
But why couldn't we go through the volcano? I mean, like, that would have been nice.
You know,
they had to limit the certain the amount of stages that you could do out of that.
I love them, and I think that they do have personality, but I think you're right, is that, you know, I ran out the outer perimeter of that island in Wii Fit, and it would have been nice to, like, even when I was running, I wish that I could go up that stupid hill to the lighthouse, but you can't. And why couldn't we drive past the lighthouse? Or, like you said, the volcano. I think I like the Maka Woohoo track better because it's got the sunset theme and everything, and you do go in a more unique path. I don't know. I do wish that they were a little more creative with it, besides, you know, like a shortcut through the castle, that sort of thing. I mean, there's a lot of spunk to that island if you really tap into it.
Yeah, I think they could have made the scenery more interesting, really.
The volcano could have been an excellent use of the glider, you know, to shoot out of there, and then you just coast down the entirety of the island, which would be ridiculous. Or maybe that would have made it slow, because that is a pretty tall volcano. But yeah, I mean, I flew that plane. Or there's the I love flying the plane through the underwater cave that's at the very bottom of the island. That would have been kind of cool to go through there. Or alongside the river that goes through the island, that kind of thing.
Absolutely.
I think that we are better level designers than Nintendo, I think. Which is such a douchey thing to say because the game's fucking great, but they may not be the most impressive, but I still really like them. And it makes me happy to go back to Woohoo Island, I think, for some reason. I think I share that that genome with Miyamoto that makes us excited about it.
Yeah, I just want to conclude for myself that even though I like Mario Kart Wii better, I think this is by far the best handheld Mario Kart game so far. Because, like, yeah, sure, there's, like, glitches on two tracks, but it's nothing. It's really nothing compared to the snaking, which just made me sell my cart right there and then.
Right.
Well, at least the computer didn't snake. I mean, I you just have to play online with the right people, you know?
Mm. Yeah, I didn't want to bother. And it's so much easier with Mario Kart 7.
Oh, absolutely. I think the online's the best that we've seen as far as handhelds are concerned. It's weird that they took some good features from the Wii one out. But, I mean, they added some good ones in, so maybe Mario Kart 8 will be better.
Let's hope. All right, we're ready to move on to your game, Sam?
Sure, I've been playing both Rocksmith and the Game Boy Ambassador games. Rocksmith, I'm just going to talk a little bit about because I haven't played it that much. Basically,
also, it's on. It's not a Nintendo console, right?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So it's a PS3 game, and it's $200. It comes with a guitar, a Les Paul Epiphone Junior guitar. I have no idea what that means. I just know it's a guitar, so...
It's an actual functioning guitar, right?
Yes. Yeah. And you can actually use any guitar with this game. You can just plug it into the system, and it works perfectly. It works with both the ones that have the... I don't know what to call that. the tuners on one side or on both sides, so works
so
perfectly.
If I take my acoustic guitar and just play it at the video game, will that work or no?
Oh no, it has to be electric.
No, I know.
So basically, this game is like Guitar Hero, but it teaches you how to play guitar. It has certain set lists like Guitar Hero, but instead of four songs, it gives you two. And it gets progressively more difficult. The first set list, for example, just teaches you how to play the chords at the top and the chords at the bottom. Forgive me if I'm saying wrong names for stuff. I have no idea what they're called.
So you're actually a beginner at this.
Oh, yeah. This is my first guitar ever.
Awesome.
So, and I've been having a lot of fun with it, though. I'm kind of mixed about how it is as a teaching tool, because it tells you how to put your fingers on the guitar, where to put them, but at the same time, if you put them wrong, it doesn't know, so you're basically just guessing. And it's easy to know where to put them, but it's hard to know where to put them while you're playing. Because, for example, let's say you have to switch from the number one position on the top to the number three. Right now, I have to actually physically look at the top of my guitar to see where that position is. And it really doesn't teach you perfectly how to do that without looking. So oh. I think maybe this is more for intermediate people who already know how to play it. So if you don't know how to put the placement of the fingers, you might want to actually learn that first and then play this game.
By positions one and three, you mean like on the fret? The different sections
yes.
of the fret, and
exactly.
does it ever change like with a capo or something? I don't know if you know what that is, being a beginner, but
no
it's just okay. It's a little device that holds the strings down at a certain fret to change the key, but okay. So it sounds like it's just your basic guitar stuff, but yeah, I mean that's just the fault of just being a beginner. I don't know.
It gets much more difficult than that. So
yeah, but you'll get through that really quick.
Oh, absolutely. There's even a section where it teaches you exactly how to play a song. I just looked at that for a second. It says, okay, put your finger here. This is the first note. You have to strum this string, and then the second note, you put your finger on the second string at the top of the strum. It basically teaches you note per note how to play the game. I mean, it has many other features, but I've just played it for just a little bit because I've been working it a lot. So I'll have to get back to that game. But I'm really having a lot of fun. And once you get into the zone, you can actually play it well, even though I'm playing it without much finesse because I don't know how to play guitar well yet. So
how is it scored? Is it kind of like Guitar Hero in that sense? Is it just like points for getting the right notes? Or
yeah, it has points, but it doesn't have... star power. It doesn't have any of that crap or anything like that. No, it's just points. And when you get a certain amount of points, you actually are qualified in that song. And then you have to play the next song in that set list. And once you play both songs, you can play like a small concert in a venue with those two songs. And when you finish those two, you get an encore, which is
kind of cool.
Yeah, kind of like Guitar Hero. You get an encore with a third song, and then you go to the second set list, which is more difficult in technique. Honestly, I'd hope it had a better selection, but you can actually buy more songs. Right now, the only song I've bought is Freebird, even though I'm probably not going to play it in like a year. Exactly. The songs that they have are like Nirvana, Queens of the Stone Age. So that one's a pretty difficult song too, the one that they have there. The Rolling Stones. And that's all I can pretty much remember right now.
Yeah, let's move on to the GBA games, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. This I know what I'm talking about. Okay, so I've been playing basically four of the 10 GBA games because I just got them today. And I haven't been playing much. I've been playing WarioWare, F-Zero, Super Mario, Advance 3, and Mario vs. Donkey Kong. Okay, so my favorite of those games is WarioWare. It's actually my favorite WarioWare game. I'm just in love with that series, and I love the first one because it's just crazy, and it doesn't have like any gimmicks like touch controls or motion controls or anything like that.
Oh, but the motion controls were so awesome and twisted.
Yeah, but I haven't played that game yet. Everybody says that's the best game, but I haven't touched it yet.
I'll admit that I tried to use my DS stylus. I was ready to use it when I played it today. And then I realized, oh yeah, this is a Game Boy Advance game.
Right.
But
yeah, but it actually, the game holds up really great. I mean, I haven't played it in years, but it's I just picked it up like if it was yesterday. And I really like how the layout on the 3DS is, in terms of this game, at least. Because since you're only using like one or two buttons at a time, so it's very easy. I'm only like three levels in, but I'm having a great time. And F-Zero actually controls even better than on the GBA because the C-pad makes everything move so smoothly. But I've actually had to like retrain myself to play this game because I kept hitting the walls and I forgot that instead of pressing the brakes, I just have to tap on the accelerator to corner better. And I have to agree with Zero. I think he said that the tracks are pretty generic, and it's really true. And the music is generic too, but it's a really fun game.
Did this game have multiplayer originally?
Yes. I don't know if I can do it. I think you can't, right?
Yeah, no, you can't with any of the Ambassador games. Or any of the Virtual Console eShop games, really.
That sucks. It would be a great, great game to play with somebody else.
Do you think there's a chance that they might change that in time? Because they still have to fix it to include the instruction manuals and like the sleep function correction, I think, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I don't think that there's going to be any change because they have been selling Game Boy games without the multiplayer feature.
Oh, okay.
Well, there's always hope. Remember that there's Street Fighter 2 on the VC for the Wii that has a multiplayer. I think that's the Genesis version, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, but you mean online, right?
Yeah.
That game hasn't come out yet,
mm-hmm.
and also it's 5 years late.
Right.
Well, yeah, it's not going to be retroactive, right? That's going to be yet another game.
Yes, it's going to be another game.
Plus, it's not by Nintendo. It's whatever other company did it.
Capcom.
Yeah, Capcom. So you can't, I guess, guarantee that it's going to be any indication, because Nintendo really doesn't want to spend resources on doing that sort of thing, unfortunately.
No. So I've also been playing Super Mario Advance, Yoshi's Island. I've actually haven't played much of this game before. I think I've played like to the first three levels. And it's fun, but at the same time, I don't like it as much as previous Mario games. I think the controls are good, but I don't like the aiming mechanism when you're shooting eggs. I do like the graphics, though, but the music seems pretty boring so far.
Oh, that music is classic.
Yeah,
just really? To withdraw that. Although I will admit that the GBA version doesn't sound as good as it did on the SNES version.
Mm-hmm.
And I would give the mechanics a little bit more time. Like, you have to get used to that game, but once you really get into it, like, it really controls well. And, you haven't seen any boss yet.
No, not yet.
You'll see. Like, it gets much better and more inventive. And also, like, it's a different focus from... I know that it's got the subtitle Super Mario World 2,
mm-hmm.
but it's really, like, a completely different focus. Like, Mario is all about running and jumping and, really fast action. And in this one, it's more slow-paced and exploration-based, and it's kind of like the birth of the collectathon.
Ugh, the collectathon.
Yeah, but because it's in 2D, though, like I find it much more manageable. It's less tiring to actually hunt for all the stuff that they ask you to find, because you're not going to miss a red coin because it was behind a tree. Like you don't have these camera issues. And usually, like, the level design is going to be the clue itself to tell you, oh, hey, there's something hidden here. Mm-hmm. Maybe you should look.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate. It's almost like you can sift it. Like, if you could just put the level on a sifting box and then just sift it down and collect everything, because you're going almost like a line across the screen, like a wave. You can just get this, get this, get this. With a 3D space, you can easily miss something, like you said, behind a tree. And then you've explored the whole damn level, and then you have to pinpoint it back again. And
oh yeah, like I was having trouble with your sifting analogy, but it makes sense. Like you as you go, like you're going to be exploring up and down and up and down. And
yeah, if you're thorough, you don't have to backtrack. But in a 3D game, there can be, like you said, the camera can cause you, even if you're being thorough, to miss something, and then you'll have to kind of go back and redo the whole thing. While I guess you would in a 2D game, but it's just a lot easier to not miss something.
Exactly, yeah.
And then this game has some of those walls where things can be hidden until you go behind the wall. Is that right? Although they did more of that in like New Super Mario Bros. Wii, and less so in this one.
I can't remember if they have that in this one.
Yeah, so then that seems like a case where you could miss something if you're not exploring thoroughly.
I know there's a lot of areas where, like, you'll shoot an egg at a cloud, and then it'll drop and create a staircase that'll rise past the mm-hmm. screen's normal barriers. And then there's a whole platform with a little sunshine or daisy thing. And so there's exploration like that, but it's still, you know, that little, oh, and actually some of those clouds pop up when you walk into that space. Like in the very first level, you walk into this little alcove and then suddenly it shows up.
Yeah, but it's never usually for important things, like, or at least it's never for the collectibles. It's just for one-ups, which you don't really need anyway, right?
Well, but even so, like, even if you wanted the one-ups, I mean, a random curve in the, like, they could have just made that look like a dome, but instead they had a little notch where you could actually go up it and then back over. So obviously that kind of hints to you that something could be over there, and there it is, you know? So it's, the level design is designed to make you think, that's a little bit peculiar, let me go check it out, and look, I'm rewarded for it. So there's not a lot of random, unused space, I suppose. So it's not hard to really, like, be a good detective in that game.
Yeah, that's a fair point. But yeah, keep at it, Sam. It's really, like, it's a rewarding game when you really get into it.
Mm-hmm. So the last game I've been playing is Mario vs. Donkey Kong. And let's just start with the good. I mean, the game is fun. I like the gameplay, but that's pretty much all I like. I hate the graphical style, and the pre-rendered graphics look horrible on the GBA screen, on the 3DS screen. The music is boring. I really don't like, I don't know, I just don't like this game that much. I think I would have preferred if they just continue with the style of the original Donkey Kong 94. You know, sprites instead of the pre-rendered graphics, and just continue with that.
I think that, is it the same presentation as in that downloadable, the March of the Minis, which was like the next one after that or something?
I think so.
Because, yeah, I find that to be pretty ugly as well. I mean, I'm enjoying that download. With the Club Nintendo points thing that just happened, I got that title. Gee, you can be happy for me for that. And I've been having a lot of fun with it. And I remember exactly why I skipped this entire series of games. But I did buy the newest one on the DS. And I love that. I love Donkey Kong 94, so I'm realizing I was an idiot. But those graphics, though, are pretty horrible. And they got a lot better with the latest DS version of the Donkey Kong Mario game, where it's more like the Lemmings. But there was that transition period where, yeah, it just looked kind of fugly.
Is it bad compared to the rendering style of the Donkey Kong Country series?
It looks similar to it, but at the same time, I don't know why when pre-rendered graphics are put on another system, they look ugly. It happens on the Wii. I don't know if it happens to you guys. I have an LCD, and if I play Donkey Kong Country, it looks really ugly. And I'm finding the same thing here with this game.
Are you sure you don't have your nostalgia goggles when you think about Donkey Kong Country? Like, maybe,
I don't know. Maybe it's just a nostalgia goggles, or maybe it's just a CRT versus LCD issue. I have no idea.
I've got an old cathode ray television. still, and Donkey Kong Country looks like shit, but it was pretty fun to play. But I had never played it in the past, so I was kind of coming into it fresh last year. Mm-hmm. But it looks like ass.
As far as the graphics go, it's just a matter of sprites aging better for the most part than these 3D graphics, right? Donkey Kong Country was pre-rendered, sure, but it was pre-rendered with the means of the time, and so, like, we've actually seen better, much better 3D graphics now, and they just can't compare.
Absolutely.
And yeah, like, I suppose that sprites, like, they're kind of a lost art, so they still look good to us.
Not in Pushmo.
Yeah, so I guess we're going to move on to what I've been playing. First, I just want to quickly mention that Kirby Returns to Dreamland still has its hold on my soul. I've been playing that a lot, and I've unlocked the hard mode. The hard mode actually makes the main adventure fun to play. It's crazy how actually fearing that you're gonna die in a game actually, like, raises the tension and makes the whole game more fun. Because, like, in the normal mode, which you have to play through, unfortunately, you can just, like, smash yourself. Like, you can, yeah, like, throw yourself at a boss, and eventually it's gonna die, and you're gonna be just fine, you know? Like, I'm barely exaggerating. But in hard mode, oh, all of a sudden, like, how you move matters, and, like, being skillful matters. Crazy.
So there's a life bar in hard mode, or is there?
Well, yeah, there's always a life bar, but, like, this time it actually depletes. And, yeah, the bosses are more aggressive, and they take a little bit longer to take down. It's just more enjoyable all around.
So based on what you and I have talked about many times about the Kirby franchise, I actually might like this if I was playing hard mode right away or something.
Well, I guess, like, one tip or one piece of advice that I would give is play the easy mode with a bunch of casual gamers, maybe like a girlfriend or something. That way, unlock the hard mode and then play hardcore by yourself.
That's true.
Because I don't think that couples would last long if they played the hard mode together. So yeah, that wraps it up for Kirby, I guess. I'm still not quite done. I'm in the last few stages on hard mode, and I'm very excited to see what else I'm going to be unlocking. And the other game that I haven't played as much because I've just been hooked on Kirby is Rayman Origins, which apparently sold abysmally in November, and that really breaks my heart because that game is Donkey Kong Country Returns 2. Like, it's a really, really great game with controls and level design that is very, very similar to Donkey Kong Country Returns. And everyone who loved that game would certainly love Rayman Origins. It's a phrase that I say a lot of times, but I'm not the biggest fan of Rayman. And like, actually, on the TV and Last podcast, they went on this rant about the first Rayman, how Rayman didn't seem to be, like, his abilities didn't seem to match the environments or the enemies that were in his way. And I agree with that entirely, and I'm not. I actually ranted about that at some point on the board, so it's there. Like, I'm not like copying what they said. Like, I absolutely agree, and I think that we came to the same conclusion simply because it's true. The original Rayman is not a good game, and it's made as if like two people with very different opinions of what a platformer should be made the Rayman character and made the levels.
Now, really quick to interject, Rayman 2 is considered a really good Rayman game, right?
Well, yeah, I heard a lot of good. I played it on the 3DS and I was not that impressed, but I think it has more to do with how influential it was on for games like Ratchet and Clank.
Maybe I'm thinking of Rayman 64 then.
Well, that's Rayman 2.
Okay, so it was re-released for the 3DS, you're saying? Okay, because yeah, I've always heard that that one was like that's the one. Whenever I hear Rayman, I always hear about two. I've never even like really heard anything about the first one. Nobody talks about it.
Well, the first one was like on the 3DO and then the PlayStation. Like, it got ported around, but it was like a CD-based game.
Oh.
Its main claim to fame was the graphics.
Right.
Very colorful, very pretty, but you look at it today and that's all that's left, like pretty graphics. It hasn't aged well in the gameplay department as far as I'm concerned. But this game, not only it looks great, but it just like it plays like Donkey Kong. Like, there's really not that much else to say about it. And there's bonus levels that play almost exactly like the tempo levels in DKCR. So if you thought that those were challenging, you're going to find the same challenge in Rayman.
I had to find a new word for challenging for those levels.
Maybe Rayman is a little bit easier.
I think I've read that it has the multiplayer. I guess you probably haven't tried that out yet, right?
Oh yeah, no, I did manage to play the
Oh, okay.
multiplayer, and I don't know. I played with two casual gamers, and I had no time to explain what the controls were, or like what they were supposed to do. And they seemed to find it a little bit more confusing than Kirby. And they like I asked them, and they said, "Oh, we had more fun with Kirby." So for casual multiplayer fun, I guess it's better to go with Kirby. But I don't think that any more experienced gamers would. Like I'm pretty sure they would gravitate more towards Rayman. There's not a whole lot of challenge actually if you're just trying to go through the levels, but there's this combo system and this like it's also a collectathon, I guess. But it's more novel in the way that yeah, it leverages this combo system. Like you're supposed to be trying to get these multipliers before you grab these things called lums. Like they could be called whatever, who cares? But I find that really adds to the challenge, and it's more than just knowing exactly where every secret is. It's also about being able to get them in time.
So you can make the game harder than it appears to be.
Yeah, like there's like an optional level of challenge that you can go for.
All right, so even with Guillaume doing the hosting again, we still want to know, what do you think? So I have some questions here for you guys, and I want your quick opinions really quick before we head on to our main topic. So first off, say Retro Studios actually makes a Zelda game in the future. Good or bad? Yay or nay?
Yay.
Yay.
I'm ready for a change.
Yeah, I think they could do a really good job. They've done really well with the Metroid series and the Donkey Kong series. I say give them another IP from Nintendo.
Absolutely.
The next question then, is the Wii U going to have GameCube Virtual Console titles?
Yes.
Maybe not.
I think they announced it, right?
Did they?
Well, I thought they did. But what I do know is that there's no GameCube console, like controller ports, so I'm probably going to keep my Wii around anyway and my, you know, GameCube games.
True. Although the Wii U controller does, I believe, have all the necessary buttons you would need. No?
From actually trying the Wii, I can't remember it having, like, analog triggers.
Oh.
So who knows?
Yeah, that does kind of play in certain games, you're right. But I think it'll just matter, and again, this is something I read off the forums that I think is a good point. It kind of depends on if they're going to have hard drive space, room, to put it, you know. GameCube games are actually, you know, as you know, a lot bigger than the rest, than Pushmo, which is like 140 blocks. But last question, what do you think is of the new name for Nintendo's latest peripheral, the Circle Pad Pro? Do you think it's a good one? Do you think it's generic? I mean, we're used to the NES Advantage and all these other kind of really epic names. The WaveBird even is kind of an epic name. It's very unique. Now we have Circle Pad Pro.
CPP. It's generic, but I really don't care because I know it's just a step for the next 3DS revision, so.
Wouldn't that be such a dick move if they never included it? They made revision after revision and never included it. And they just made bigger Circle Pad Pros.
It would only be a dick move if games actually required it. But I don't think, I'm not planning on buying one. And I don't see the necessity of having a second Circle Pad. So, no, fuck it. No, I don't care.
I agree with you, Guy. I doubt that a game that I'm going to want is going to need it. Because I'm not into Monster Hunter, for instance. That's like the big one that's going to use it. Or the Resident Evil game, right?
Yes.
Resident Evil 4 didn't use the second, like the C-stick, right? Yeah, I think it was only to look around, but it didn't aim or it didn't do anything. So, and when I played the Resident Evil 4 demo, I didn't feel like I was missing it. So, again, fuck that thing.
All right, so my topic today is going to be about winter and snow-themed areas in video games. It is the holiday season, after all, for many of us, and I'm not seeing much snow on the ground here in Michigan yet, but I'm sure that's on its way. And so I've been kind of in the mood to visit some games, or at least I've been pondering it, that they've had just some sort of extra oomph to them with the snow and the winter dynamic, because I think it really changes. It can change gameplay for the better in certain ways. There's unique puzzles and unique set pieces that happen in snowy areas, I guess. Well, of course, some games don't really do it so well, like the Ocarina of Time ice block puzzle in the ice cavern in general. I wasn't really a big fan of, but I just want to make a mention really quick of some of my favorites, and then I'll throw it to you guys, and we can just discuss, you know, what you guys think about these kind of worlds. That's a little more recent is Super Mario Galaxy's bunny, the bunny chasing segment. I thought that was a really creative use of the snow hiding things and, you know, the white bunnies, and it was generally fun to chase after those suckers. But there was something very cool about being on a little planetoid in the middle of the universe with just snow. I don't know, it gave me just warm fuzzies, I suppose. then also an obvious snow level, one of the first snow levels perhaps, was the Himalayan level in DuckTales. Again, you've got white bunnies, which I guess maybe that's kind of a cliche now that I'm thinking about it. But I thought that was a really fun level, and the snow changed how your pogo stick worked. You couldn't use it in the same way, and if you missed an enemy, then you would be stuck. So that was, you know, that was kind of an early example of how using snow could change gameplay up. I guess and this is pathetic because I can't even think of which Pokemon game it is. One of the more recent ones, I think it's Heart Gold. There's a section where you just kind of transition and suddenly it's kind of, maybe it's soot even, but it's just raining this kind of snowy. You know.
I think you're right. I think it's Heart Gold, like in a mountain area.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, I think you're right. And I guess like even snowier as you go, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that part was very cool.
Yeah, you play the game and, you know, the grass looks like grass no matter where you are. Maybe you've got a swamp section. I know some of these games have that, but the snow just really was a nice change of pace. And it's all kind of sectioned off, so it's just very secluded and very, you can almost sense the cold, quiet chill of the air. And I just thought that was a really great use of it in that game. The two main things, the things that sparked my interest in this whole topic were Banjo-Kazooie, which I don't know if you guys have thought about that game in a little while, but that actually had two sections that were like that. There's Freezy Peak, and then there's also the Click Clock Wood Winter section. Those levels are some of my favorite in that entire game. You've got the snowman enemies, which throw the snowballs, and they have the top hats, and it's a very fun enemy to battle, who can actually be one of the more annoying ones as well. But the music particularly sticks with me. I don't know, I almost wish that I had a music CD that I could play around the house of Christmas music and have some of that in there. I don't think anyone would notice the difference. But then you've got a lot of memorable characters in there too, with polar bears and walruses and things like that, and even the Christmas tree light creatures. And then like this, they really went, you know, balls to the wall with that particular level. And Click Clock Wood, you see, you go from spring to summer to fall, and then you go to winter and it's all dead and the bird has left. And to me, they always feel the most refreshing when you get to that. Like, I really enjoyed the spring section and the summer section. And the fall was kind of cool. Autumn is my favorite of the seasons, but winter just always makes it feel, I think, the most unique. And there's also the whole death motif and the end of stuff. You know, like in that Click Clock Wood segment, the plant that you've been growing all year, I suppose you could say, you know, using the camel to water it and all that stuff, that's dead. The beehive is all desolate and disheveled. I think it's missing half of itself. But the number one thing that I thought of, that I seriously, this game tainted snow for me in a good way. Like when I see it raining snow down on me or snowing snow down on me, I always think of this game. And it's Metroid Prime, which is not a shocker, I'm sure. I'm sure everyone at home is yelling it at the computer or the iPod or something. But let me try this. Fendrana Drifts.
Yay!
I was waiting on that.
Yeah, no, I'm looking at it, I'm phonetically reading it. I mean, I feel like all my topics on the podcast in like the past few episodes have just been gushing about shit, which is cool, I'm fine with that. But this is one of those few gaming moments in my life where my jaw literally just is to the ground. It's when you finally emerge in the drifts and you've been seeing some lava levels or areas and some mossy, very earthy areas, and then you just come into this wonderland full of monsters that want to kill you. But it's something else. And the music is so chilling. And again, it really captures that cold, bitter chill of winter. And I don't know. I mean, do you guys think that I'm full of shit? Is there something special sometimes about these? Do you guys, is it more of a personal thing with just my connection with winter itself? Eric, you're from Texas?
Yes, Dallas.
Yeah, so you don't get much snow.
Well, actually, no, I have a pretty big fondness, just like you do, for the snow and ice levels in video games. And maybe because I don't see it very often, it's something that I guess I can appreciate more in a video game. And I like the way it does represent like a combination of something peaceful yet very deadly at the same time.
You mentioned how refreshing they were, but like, do you think, for like taking Metroid for instance, like, do you think the fact that it was the first time that we saw a ice level in a Metroid game had anything to do with that feeling of freshness?
For me, no, because that was actually my first Metroid game, so I didn't have any back Metroid games to reference off of. It wasn't like, for me, it wasn't, oh, this is so cool for a Metroid game. It was, this is so cool for a game.
Okay, when you arrive in this area, first, like, you're inside tunnels, right? Mm-hmm. Did you feel like those tunnels were special, or is it more like when you arrived at the big open area that all of a sudden was like, wow.
I think I did really like the tunnels leading up to it, because I think there's even a weapon or a missile upgrade inside some ice, and you think, how are you going to get to that and things like that. So it kind of teases it a little bit. But yeah, the open space, which I know that there were some open spaces as well earlier in the game, but seeing a vast, open, snowy area, that's like incredibly badass.
It is. But I'm kind of wondering, you know, like perhaps like these ice levels, because they like, sure, they represent something deadly and beautiful, but I'm pulling that out of my ass. But I would think also, like, is it just me, or are those levels usually more open than others would be? I'm trying to think of, like, because they're basically a white desert, right?
Sort of.
And
yeah, I guess you got a point there.
And so, like, perhaps, like, this feeling of openness, when a lot of games usually have levels that are quite constrained, or, like, I mean, smaller and...
Well, looking back at my other examples, the Mario Galaxy example, that's a very small planetoid, you know, compared to the other bigger levels of the game. In Pokemon, it's its own big section, but it's not as big compared to the other sections. It's kind of the average, so maybe in the Metroid game, that is part of it.
The levels that come to mind, like, especially, personally, I really like snow levels in RPGs. And Dragon Quest VIII comes to mind. That game is already really beautiful and expansive, and you can see far in the distance. But at some point, you get to a snow area, and I remember feeling that same feeling of, wow, like, this is something new. This is some, like, now I'm getting somewhere beautiful and... Yeah, I'm not sure if I could explain it personally.
I agree. I get the same feeling whenever I play Death's Peak in Chrono Trigger. Such a beautiful level with the storm going on at the same time.
Oh, absolutely.
That's where the technology, it's like the dead area, right? Where there's kind of been...
It's a mountain that's completely covered in snow, and there's a storm raging in most of the sections.
I was wondering, like, do you guys feel... I don't really have any background in programming or anything of the sort, but do you guys feel that ice levels or snow levels are perhaps, like, a good occasion for these developers to show off their graphical chops? Because you have, like, usually snow falling, so that's, like, particle effects, I suppose, mm-hmm. and you've got translucent ice, and perhaps there's something, you know, about these ice levels that, or snow levels, that make them more, of a showcase for a game.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I agree, too.
And the physics, too. With the reduced friction of ice and the slipperiness of all that, you can do some fun things with that. And every game does it differently. I mean, some, like I said, the ice block puzzle, but other like the penguin suit in Super Mario, New Super Mario Brothers Wii, I thought was kind of neat. And like, you know, you can always run across blocks that are only one space apart, but here you can slide across, but then you have other penguins sliding across too. I could see that as being a showcase, and I think that's what the creators of Metroid Prime were doing. I think that's what Retro was trying to accomplish there. Because you see, I guess, particle physics, or just particles in general, with the blaster a little bit, but you don't see anything like that I can remember until you get there. You know, you see lava flows, maybe, so you see that kind of liquid.
Although, like, you see rain right when you descend on Talon 4, so, I don't know. There's a lot of particle effects in Metroid Prime in the first place.
That's true, there is the rain in there, but, well, rain, you know, rain is super translucent, obviously. And I feel like the snow almost is particles that stand out.
Right, it's less subtle, so it would be perhaps more impressive because of that. There was a thread on Negative World about, are you tired of the same cliche levels and platformers? And snow levels were, you know, one of those cliches. My answer to that was, I'm fine with them when they do something new. It doesn't really matter what the environment is. If they show more care and show some sort of innovation, I'm more accepting of them. And one of the examples I gave was, those ice levels in Super Mario Galaxy. With just one shake of the Wiimote, you start skating.
Right.
And, like, that was the very first time in my life, I think, that I skated in the game, except, like, ice hockey or whatever.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like, it was such a joy to see Mario not only skate, but do, like, figures.
Yeah,
like, if you want to... talk about something new, like, that was something I had never seen before, and like, just skating around was so much fun in itself that made that level really, really memorable for me.
It's really cool how in some of those levels, I don't know if it's every one, but they combine the ice skating with, like, lava, and you have to obviously not skate into the lava. That adds, like, a weird cross breed of, I guess, just thematic elements, and so I think that not only is the gameplay unique in Mario Galaxy for that, but again, the presentation, there was something new to it.
Well, also, like, one of the prototypical snow levels was in Super Mario 64, and Like, who else was amazed when, like, they jumped off, like, a great height and fell in the snow and actually, stuck. Got stuck. And Mario had to pull himself up. Just showed, like, polish and attention. And, there were a lot of firsts in that game, really. Like, rolling snowballs and all that stuff. Like, that's classic now.
What about the games that actually revolve entirely around ice? And, well, I'm thinking back to the NES. Did you guys play Kiko Cubicle?
No. I've heard about it, but no.
Mr. Mustache talks about it all the time.
Like a puzzle overhead game where you character can freeze enemies. And I guess it's more of an ice block pushing kind of game, and similar to what they did in the Zelda games. But I remember having good memories of that game, and it's pretty interesting that it all revolves around the whole ice concept. So that was worth mentioning.
Oh, it absolutely is. Yep. And actually, it's one of my favorite NES games.
Oh, okay.
And puzzle games in general.
One level that I wanted to mention, actually, it's not a level, it's just the environment changing completely. It's in Animal Crossing, or any Animal Crossing. Whenever it's like winter time and it's snows, I love it. I love how it looks on the ground. I love how it looks on the houses and the decorations that they put up on the houses, like Christmas lights and all that stuff, just makes the game look so much better.
I think that perhaps like sometimes it's snow levels are unwelcome because a lot of the time it's just an excuse to make the controls really slippery and or to slow you down. And that's never really fun,
no,
I guess.
But that's more of a problem with, you know, the lazy ass developer than the actual setting. Because you don't have to go that. Like, that's the cliche then. It's not the snow level, but it's the slippery, you know, ground.
Yeah, like they make, they really increase difficulty, but not in a good way,
nope,
as far as I'm concerned.
And unfortunately, Luigi always has ice on his fucking shoes.
Video game series, most series that have continued on and had several iterations, looking at Nintendo series as a good example, like Mario, Zelda, Metroid, obviously they had to start somewhere, and as the games progress through the series, certain elements of the game are kept, certain elements are thrown out. And when I'm talking about different elements, I'm not talking about just characters or story settings, but gameplay mechanics as well. And when I got to thinking about it, really you could take a look at each series independently and say, is the developer looking at the first game and seeing what worked there? And well, let's talk concrete examples just to clarify it a little bit. For example, Super Mario Brothers. When you first got to Super Mario 64, the first Mario game in the 3D world, it was a very different game, but you still had some platforming elements. You still had the Mushroom Kingdom enemies, the Goombas, the Koopa Troopas, Bowser, but now the game is now more exploration-based. And I think it's a good thing to change up the gameplay mechanics and still keep elements from the previous game so that, you know, you're appealing to the fans' love for the characters and the setting, but you still want to create something new. I think one game that had a lot of division in the Mario series was Super Mario Sunshine. One thing you'll notice is that it had very little elements from the previous Mario games because you didn't have your Mushroom Kingdom characters, no Goombas, and it did have Yoshi, but he was pretty different. He dissolves in water, so that was very different. If you look at these different game series, are there elements of the game that the developers should continue to push forward as the series evolves, and do you think it's more fan-driven or just whatever makes sense for the game?
I don't have that much to say about this topic, I guess. Mm-hmm. I just, my general consensus is that it's better to stay closer to your roots than to divert away from them. Like, I buy a Mario game for a reason, and I buy a Zelda game for a reason. But if you stay too, it's a fine line. If you stay too close to your roots, well, then the game will feel stagnant or boring. If you stray too far, well, then why am I playing this game? Why doesn't it have a different character, or why is it not just a different game? So it's definitely a very fine line. With Super Mario Sunshine, I felt like the gameplay, at least, was classic enough. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't really miss the elements so much, especially coming off of Super Mario 64. I felt that I got my fix of old-school Mushroom Kingdom-ness, you know? And it was kind of nice to see Mario go on vacation a little bit. There is a problem with that particular game in terms of variety of the levels, because it is very specifically themed. But I think it's a good change of pace. I don't mind them developers going kind of crazy with that once in a while. Like Super Mario Sunshine, I would consider as quite a departure thematically. But then they didn't do it again. They didn't, you know, Super Mario Vacation 2. Yeah, they didn't stick with that. They changed it up. Then Galaxy came along. But there was another example, is Galaxy. They did the second game pretty much in the same vein as the first. Now, for me, like, I heard tons of complaints about how, oh, it's just a level pack, or it's different enough, it's boring, and so what if there's Yoshi? But to me, I played Mario Galaxy, loved the shit out of it. I wanted more. That's exactly what I wanted. Mm-hmm. And Yoshi, I felt, changed it up enough. So I think it's a weird, fine line mix of the developer deciding whether or not they need to boost sales by changing the formula enough. And then it's also the gamer who has each person has their own specific definition of what's too much for them. And that's pretty much where like 80% of all internet arguments come from, is just everyone's freaking scales are different. Right. But I don't know. I do feel that if you're going to change a game to a super extent, make it a spinoff or just give it a different IP entirely.
When I think of this topic, I think of message board arguments also. And one of the terms that comes back all the time when you're sad that a series has changed its focus is purist. And it's usually used like pejoratively. You know, like, oh, you say that because you're a Resident Evil purist and you don't like that it's turned into a shooter, but it's just like Resident Evil 4 is better than any of the previous games, and you're just, you know, latching on to the past, and you got to evolve, and, you know, that sort of crap. I think that as Steven really eloquently put it, like, there's no... this is just like we all have different expectations and different levels at which we find like these levels of change acceptable. Mm-hmm. Personally, like, I have, in general, I like at least a series to keep its main focus. For instance, like Resident Evil, I thought for me turned into a little bit too much into an action game, whereas before it was more of an adventure game. Perhaps not because of the puzzles, but, you know, maybe more because of the exploration, and also combat was not a priority. You know, like Resident Evil 4, all of a sudden, it's all about shooting zombies. Well, non-zombies, but you know what I mean.
Right.
Yeah, like, I can understand, like, older fans of a series not to be, you know, too pleased with that kind of change. And I would certainly agree that making it a spinoff in a case like that would be probably a good idea.
And here's like, the weird devil's advocate part of that. You know, the people who like Resident Evil 4 a lot, they were going to say, well, look, it made the series so much better. I love it. It's the right direction to go. Then you weren't happy with the original game, so that's why you like this. You weren't as happy with it, perhaps. To me, it just seems like you're just reverse justifying it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, pretty much. It could have been called something different, but Capcom wanted to bank on the Resident Evil name, so there we were.
Right, and it doesn't mean that any future games with the Resident Evil name and the old school gameplay would be bad. But people will make that assumption that, oh, look how good it is as a shooter, so screw that old way. You know, they didn't know better back then. But that's not necessarily true. But a lot of people phrase their arguments that way.
Yeah, like, because you could have Resident Evil 4 focus more on exploration and puzzle solving, and less on shooting and more on surviving, and it would probably still be a great game. Like, the main change was probably putting the camera behind the player.
Right.
And, yeah, like, without changing anything else, like, already that was a huge improvement in terms of controls and solved a lot of the issues that people had with that series. I don't know. Like I feel that the you know, the ire of the older fans is justified, but at the same time, like, there's no denying that it's a well-made, good game. So, like, it's hard to fault the people who latch onto that game and say, like, you know, like, this reinvention is so much better than the older stuff. I've also been called a purist because I didn't like Metroid Prime Hunters. And, you know, that's the DS game that was more of a shooter than a an adventure game. I don't think it's really being a purist to want what makes Metroid Metroid in your Metroid game.
Right. Yeah, but that game also had terrible controls, so.
Yeah, like, some people are fans, though. Like, don't tell Game Dad Grant that. So, like, for those who like the controls, fine, sure. I just don't see, again, the point of having really... Well, okay, I can see the point because, like, this was clearly a spin-off, right? Like, it was called Metroid Prime Hunters, not Metroid Prime 4 or 3 at the time. So, like, okay, you've got a spin-off. Hopefully people who buy it know what to expect. And it did bring Metroid elements into a shooter. For instance, the whole Morph Ball thing.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, at the same time, don't call me purist because I don't like it. I mean, if I don't like shooters, I like Metroid. Like, that doesn't mean I'm going to like this game.
Well, one thing that I said, I think, in the beginning, or maybe it was before the podcast, but I said I was going to mention Banjo-Kazooie a lot in this podcast. And that's because that's another example of a game that changed dramatically in the series. And I know that there are some people who enjoy Nuts and Bolts, but I've played it a little bit, and I've played the hell out of the first two, and that is such a departure that I can't even believe they framed it as the actual third game in the series. That is not Banjo 3, you know? I don't know if you guys know too much about the series, but obviously the first two are collect-a-thon platformers.
Kind of like Mario 64.
Absolutely. There's different. The worlds are designed the same, but in Nuts and Bolts, it's a vehicle creator. It's you collect parts to things, and you create planes and buggies, and you use that to overcome your challenges instead of, you know, learning how to use Banjo and Kazooie separately or together to do special moves and things like that. And they could have totally incorporated that into the third game in some sort of element, but to focus a whole game on it, I mean, Grunty's Revenge on the Game Boy Advance, which I don't think, I never even had a chance to play that. I think that was considered more of a spinoff, but I think that was actually more closer to the gameplay than Nuts and Bolts. And so I don't know. I don't know if anyone would call me a purist for not being a Nuts and Bolts fan, but it's just kind of sick that they would just take that series, which was really popular at the time, and then just bastardize it like that.
Did the developers, or did Rare, say that their intent was for this to be the next in the series?
Yeah. I mean, I don't have any quotes for you or anything, but they promoted it very much like, oh, Banjo's back. You know, the ads and the promotional videos, they were all like, hey, look, Banjo and Kazooie are back, and here you go. Have fun, guys.
Right. It would have made more sense to sell it as a spin-off, right?
Yeah, and I mean, they didn't call it Banjo-Kazooie 3. They called it Banjo-Kazooie Nuts and Bolts, but they still marketed it and discussed it like a third one. And then, of course, they haven't made a third one.
What about situations like Kirby, where a lot of people seem to prefer the spin-offs over the main games?
And that's kind of a weird example of evolution, perhaps, because if that's so generally accepted as the truth, then maybe it's so much that people expect, on a mass scale, fresh, unique presentation and gameplay from the Kirby series, and that you will have a more minority of people who appreciate the classic float and suck mechanic, you know.
Right.
But like, when I think of Kirby, even though my first game was the Game Boy Advance one, I actually think of Kirby as, you know, with all the powers and everything. That's just me, but to me, like, that is more like real Kirby than Kirby Adventure or whatever one I played.
Or maybe it's because the Kirby series in general, from the very beginning, Nintendo was more open to doing these spin-offs. I mean, what was one of the earlier spin-offs? I remember Kirby's Pinball Land, Kirby's Dream Course. So, I mean, he was always a very versatile character that Nintendo could use in a variety of games outside of the adventure games, right?
Yeah, but Nintendo was already used to using their characters to promote other types of gameplay, like just Dr. Mario.
Sure.
A puzzle game doesn't have anything to do with Mario, but and Mario's not a doctor. What the hell are you doing, Nintendo? But yeah, like they just went with it, and that's probably like one of the main uses of Kirby. Like I know that Steven said earlier that why not use a new IP? But in this case, Nintendo uses the bankability, I guess, of Kirby games or the Kirby name to promote these weird experiments that perhaps people wouldn't, look at twice otherwise. Just recently, Mass Attack was a fantastic game. It really has nothing to do with Kirby, but really doesn't matter. Like it kind of fits somehow that Kirby would be split into 10 little Kirbys, and even though he doesn't have his usual powers anymore, just watching those little Kirbys bash cute enemies is just adorable. I don't know, and like if it's great new gameplay that I had never seen before, and if the Kirby name helps Nintendo, gives them the courage to actually try to market that, then yeah, go for it.
Yeah, I think Nintendo just really uses Kirby as the experimental franchise. Anything that they can fit into any other franchise, they just use Kirby for it.
Yeah, and that's why I think it's acceptable in a way. Because like I said, like it's on a mass scale has been accepted as that. Like Epic Yarn, I probably, even though I'm not that into Kirby, I wouldn't even give it a second look necessarily besides the graphics if it didn't have Kirby in it. I wondered
Agreed.
why is it Kirby? Why did they choose to make it Kirby? And then actually it does happen to fit. I think it looks really good. Not necessarily to drive away from the Kirby topic, but it makes me wonder if we had gotten the actual Super Mario Brothers 2 instead of, the American version, the Doki Doki Panic version. Would we see as much variety, or would we be as used to change in the Mario series, or would we still, or like maybe would we have accepted that as easily? Because we right away got Shy Guys and Birdo and all that weird shit, I mean, it was, you had Mario Brothers and you had the LSD trip. And
Right.
so at that point, it was okay to mix in a little bit of little LSD here and there, take a hit as Miyamoto would do in any game. Thereafter, but still holding to the main roots. But if we had gotten the actual Mario Brothers 2, which was pretty much just a,
Like a
a ball
level pack.
crushing, yeah, of ridiculous proportions, would Mario 3 have turned out the same way?
Probably not. I'm really not a big fan of the Japanese Mario game. I much prefer the American Super Mario Brothers 2.
I like it. Just quick opinion, I do like it, but I like it when I have a save state.
I agree. Totally.
There's no
Totally.
way in hell I'm playing that on a single playthrough, no.
What's interesting, though, about these early experiments with different franchises is that, yeah, we do see a lot of series taking completely different directions for the second game. Like Zelda also took a left turn. We all know that. And Castlevania and things like that. But there's, I think that Super Mario Bros. 2, Japan, and Adventure of Link were both developed by different teams than the original games, and so like they both took a very different approach. Like the team for Adventure of Link decided like screw it, we're just doing our own thing, and the team for Super Mario Brothers 2 just decided like screw it, we're going to do the exact same, but really really difficult and unfair. But it looks like there was like no real direction given to them. Or, perhaps that's just like an uninformed opinion, but it looks like there was no one really overseeing things. Like when you hear Miyamoto talk about those games, he seems to have been less hands-on, and perhaps he's a little bit more critical of them. Or am I making that up? Well, actually, like I'm unsure about Adventure of Link, but I'm pretty sure that he had very little to do with Super Mario 2 Japan.
Sorry if I'm digressing from this, but what you're making me think of right now is perhaps maybe there's a relative link to, no pun intended, as a franchise ages, if it's more or less acceptable. Because when you have Adventure of Link, I mean, I don't remember, I was too young to give a damn back then, but would I have cared? Like me now, would I have cared that they made such a change, or would I have embraced it? Well, now if they did something like that, I'd be kind of like, what the fuck? Why am I don't know, I don't know how you do this with 3D Zelda, but I'd be pretty shocked.
I'm fairly sure that kids back then were also shocked.
Yeah.
I mean, perhaps they were more accepting because like it was their one game. Because kids back then, like we were all more accepting of the games that we got as gifts, right? Like we got a game, we would play it until the next Christmas or birthday. So yeah, like perhaps just because of that, we were more accepting of these drastic changes that Super Mario Brothers or Doki Doki Panic and Adventure of Link took. I don't think it's just because they've been around for a long time that we wouldn't be as accepting of change. I think it's just more a kids versus adults
well,
thing.
I was also wondering if maybe the opposite could be true. Like after a series has been around for, you know, so long, are we itching for change? I know some people feel that way about Zelda and feel like, I mean, it's weird. You look at Skyward Sword and you see some people think that it changed it totally a lot. Oh, they did wonderful things for the series. And I kind of agree with that. But I can also see the people that say, oh, they didn't do that much. And it's just amazing to see people argue, not, and I don't mean fight, but just argue the points of if this gameplay mechanic change was good enough. Again, it just goes back to everyone's personal preference, even though everyone waves their dick around like their opinion is the only one. But still, yeah, I think it's just a very personal thing. I don't know if there's really any one answer to it.
A franchise, like Steven was saying, that's been running for a long time, maybe there are times when change is necessary just so, you know, bring something new to the table. And those are pretty much the points. So,
how do you, Eric, how do you take change?
It's hard to say, and I really think it depends on what the game and how attached I am to that particular series or what kind of gameplay mechanics there are already. For example, when I played Other M, which I know caused a lot of division, I appreciated a lot of the change in that game, although you could argue that the Metroid series really didn't need a lot of change at that point. I appreciated the changes they made, and in fact, they got rid of a lot of the elements that people were familiar with in Metroid games, like enemies dropping health items, or there's a bigger focus now on away from Samus being the lone protagonist on the planet. So, but I like those kind of changes, and if it changes the game and if it's still fun to play, then I don't have a problem with that. So
I guess the thing you can take away from this whole discussion is that change is always a gamble, and you know, while we all have our personal opinions, the developer has two points to be careful with. One is not screwing up what makes it work. I mean, a lot of games get changed up when they're not broken. And then the other point, I think just the guts that a certain developer has to do something different. Because I know that as developers, they don't want to always be doing the same thing either, just for a personal project. You know, I mean, you get sick of doing the same thing every day.
I think it's good for the industry, for the gaming industry, to see change. And, you know, Nintendo's done a good job of that. I mean, I'm not just saying that as a fanboy, but...
No, totally.
Speaking of change, how do you guys feel about the DS Zelda games? Spirit Tracks and Phantom Hourglass. I personally do not like them at all because I don't like the mechanics of controlling Link with a stylus. I think it's kind of like not as as precise as I would like. What do you guys feel about that?
I think that they're pretty good. I'm not a big fan of the stylus control, but I still enjoy the games as a whole. But I think there's a lot to be said about a 2D Zelda that is just based on grids. And there's still a lot of fun design elements you can do with that. And there's still, I think they can still take that places. So I kind of wish we would see that again.
Yeah, I'm not, I don't think that my beef with Phantom Hourglass, which is the only one of the two I've played, are really linked to the changes that they brought to the Zelda structure. It's more, you know, the whole, like, the bad design decisions.
Like the temple?
Yeah, pretty much. That pretty much was the huge turnoff for me.
Yeah, I hated that temple so much.
That was a pain.
Yes.
Yeah, but I don't think that the puzzles were bad or anything. Like, I don't think those changed, really. They were still Zelda puzzles. And I welcomed them, I guess. And there were a lot of neat touches, like, you know, triangulating position on the map and things like that. Like, it was... neat DS-specific puzzles that only, yeah, changed things up a bit. Mm-hmm. Like, I really didn't mind.
Or making a path with the boomerang. That was pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
So my topic is, what remakes would you like to see, what franchises need rebooting, and who has already done it well? I'm going to start with what remakes you would like to see, and I'm going to start with The Legend of Zelda Collection. I would love to see a game for the Wii U and also for the 3DS at the same time that has the first four games in it, Zelda 1, 2, A Link to the Past, and Link's Awakening, but with better graphics, better sound, perhaps all orchestral music, and a couple of upgrades like they have been doing for the 3D classic games. For example, it'd be great if you could use the Wii U or the 3DS touchscreen to put the HUD on it, or to put the maps on the lower part, and maybe just access all the items from the touchscreen and all that stuff. Make, for example, for the first game, I would like to add like a village or something like that to make the game even more populated, which would make it more and make it seem more like the second, third, and fourth game. The second game, you know that Adventure of Link has a lot of problems with continuing. If you die, you have to go back to the very beginning of the game. And it would be great if in this remake, you could go to the second continent, start in different places there, maybe in different villages, and go from there. I don't know, add bus rush modes like Ocarina of Time 3D and all that stuff. Be able to map all the buttons how you like it. The same thing for A Link to the Past, basically the same thing that I've said for the first two games. And for Link's Awakening, since the 3DS and the Wii U have a lot more buttons, it would be great if they allowed us to map a lot of different items to those buttons instead of just the AB ones, so that you could be able to use your sword, your shield, and jump at the same time, instead of having to jump or use your sword like in the Game Boy version. Maybe they could also just add some elements like the color temple, but doing something similar with the capabilities of the 3DS or the Wii U. And that's pretty much it for that game. Another game that I would like to see remade is Eternal Darkness for the GameCube. I would love to see this game on the Wii U. It's one of my favorite games of all times. Actually, it's one of my top 10 games, actually. I think it would be great to use the Wii U controller and the motion sensors and anything, any other feature that the Wii U has for insanity effects. Pretty sure it would have better graphics, better sounds. But I would actually keep the same voice actors. Maybe do something like they did with Twin Snakes, where they just redid all of the voice acting, but with the same voice actors. And I would also add new areas, new story elements, and new puzzles. So that's pretty much the remakes that I would like to see, and I would like to see what games you would like to see remade too.
Personally, like I guess I am kind of a purist to you know, linking back to that other topic, because it's kind of the same thing with movies and with video games. Like when I hear about a remake, I feel compelled to go see the original or to go play the original if possible. If it's not easily made available to me, then I will probably stick it out with the remake. Mm-hmm. For instance, like, you know, like I was a Nintendo only gamer, so I never played the original Resident Evil until the remake on the GameCube. Mm-hmm. So I didn't go back to the original. Like, it was just like, there was no way I was going to buy a Sony system at the time, which were like the PlayStation 1 was dead and the PlayStation 2 was overpriced. So that was not happening. But other than that, like these old games are usually as good as they're going to get. Like, I mean, if they weren't broken in the first place, I don't see the point of a remake, really. I know that the presentational elements are probably like a big deal for a lot of people, but I like my crunchy pixels. perhaps I don't like the muddy Ocarina of Time graphics as much, though. And you know, like there's no debating that the 3DS remake is much better looking. I don't know. Like I can't really think of anything. Like if I'm gonna ask for a remake, it's gonna be for a game I haven't played yet. Because at this point in my gaming career, mm-hmm. I feel like I crave new things and freshness, more than I want to relive old memories.
I kind of feel the way you do, Guy, and in fact, or in terms of if the game was good in the first place, I don't feel compelled to want to see a remake. The only times, or what really makes me want to remake, are games that I might have missed that I heard really good things about, and I will want to play the original, but I would like to see a remake such that that idea or concept can be expanded on a little bit and be brought to a new audience. And I think what I've seen on a lot of message boards is Metroid 2 on Game Boy is one example of a game I'd like to see again, because it did. I do like that it just came out again on the 3DS Virtual Console, and that's a game that I always have fond memories of, and that would be great because it was really limited by what the Game Boy could do, and now they can really do something different with it while keeping a lot of this, going back to my topic, a lot of the elements that I liked about the game in the first place. And other remakes I could possibly see as well are some of the more obscure games, like there's a Game Boy game called Mo Mania, which is one of Miyamoto's lesser known games that I've seen videos of it, but I haven't played it. That would be pretty neat to see as a remake, because since that time, you know, no one's really played it or taken a look at it.
For me, I haven't really thought about this too much, but remakes, I don't mind them. Like, I think it's cool to have, especially because generations have passed and some of these games have come out. It doesn't hurt, I think, for people to have their first experience with Ocarina of Time to be in this cleaner, newly, you know, freshened up version. But I don't know if I necessarily care. Like Guy likes the new experiences with remakes, so he'd rather have a game that he hasn't played be remade. I guess if I didn't care to play it in the first place, then I don't necessarily care to play a remake. And if I do care to play it, but I just never did, then that's a good way to get me to play it. Like Chrono Trigger, for, you know, when it was released on the DS, it wasn't so much remade as it was re-released with a few, I guess, minor touch-ups, but it was a way for me to finally be able to play that game. And it even included the cutscenes from, like, I guess it was the Saturn version or the PlayStation
The PS1.
Version? PS1, yeah. So, I mean, that was, for me, that was my first experience with that, and I don't know any better that the cutscenes weren't in the Super Nintendo version, but I think that it did benefit from that. If I was to think of games that I would like to see remade, Diddy Kong Racing, I know, had a sequel, right? Or was, no, that was remade, correct?
Right.
I guess I wouldn't mind seeing a 3DS remake of it, or even a console version. Although I can't imagine they'd ever do a console remake of that game. But then the other one that I kind of would like to do is Little Nemo, Dream Master, which is a game that I really enjoy, but I feel like there's a few archaic things about it that maybe I'm just a pansy and I don't like that I can't save after each level, that kind of thing. Like, if you lose, it's one of those games where you kind of go back to the very beginning and such. I think some, you know, updated graphics, the classic music, maybe with a little bit better sound quality, but still keeping that 8-bit feel, would be really, really cool. But see, that's a game that I've played before that I want to experience in an even better light. So I guess I'm in that camp that's a little bit different than you guys, perhaps, where I'd rather play a game that I maybe touched upon a little bit, never got a chance to really dive into, but I have an interest in it already. I want to see that remade as opposed to something brand new that now is going to pique my interest like it's a new game. But there's benefits to both perspectives.
Who has already done it well? In my opinion, Bionic Commando Rearm is an excellent remake. I don't know if you guys have played both versions, the NES and the PS3 Xbox versions.
Yeah, sadly, no. And I wish that the original... Yeah, this is a case where I wish the original was on the Virtual Console.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's one of the best games for the NES. One of my favorite, too. The Rearm version actually keeps most of the level design intact, but it adds new elements. For example, it has a better style, has an amazing soundtrack, which sounds very industrial. It has achievement and trophy support. And one of my favorite parts about it is that it has, like, bonus training missions where it teaches you how to play the game and how to use your grappling hook perfectly, so that when you're actually playing the game, you are, like, breezing through it, even though it's a difficult game. I don't know if I'm spoiling it. Well, I am spoiling it. In the last level, if you played the NES version, the last boss, you just, like, jump down from a cliff and you shoot bazooka into Hitler's face. In this one, you actually get to fight Hitler in his helicopter, and then you shoot a bazooka to his face. Huh. So it's pretty awesome. Another game that has already been touched upon is Resident Evil for the GameCube. I mean, Guy has never played the original, is that what you said?
Yep.
Okay, so I played the original, and I played the GameCube version, and I don't like going back to the original. I mean, the graphics are like a zillion times better. The music is better. The voice acting is actually good. It has the same basic story, but it has a lot of new elements, such as a new zombie character. I don't remember her name. I think it's Melissa or something like that. I don't know if you guys remember.
Yeah,
she creeped me
out. Oh my God, she creeped me out too, especially when you go down the stairs in the middle of the mansion and you hear her screams. So creepy. And then the game was like pretty much 70% new layouts and new puzzles. It was just such an amazing remake, and it's so different from the first game that it actually feels like a new game, even though it has the same story.
Yeah, I was going to mention something about that, mm-hmm. because I think that one good way to do a remake is like this. Like, you put elements that will surprise the people who have played the original.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that perhaps, like the original is known for, like, the dogs jumping, from the window.
Yeah, through the window in that corridor.
Yeah, and, like, in the remake, it's a little bit different, right? Like, they don't initially jump.
I think the window cracks, but nothing happens.
Yeah, right.
And then when you come back through the corridor, then the dogs come out.
Yeah, so, like, touches like that, like, mm-hmm. when the people making the remake are willing to be, like, playful, to be, like, wink, wink, nudge to the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And people like me who play it for the first time don't really notice, but, like, we are not missing anything, really.
They also added a pretty cool new zombie character called the Crimson Zombie or something like that. Where if you leave a zombie dead on the floor, I mean, it stays there for a while. And then when you come back later, it's actually a more powerful, faster version of that same zombie. So it's in your best interest to either shoot him in the head or just light him up somehow with some lighter fluid or something like that, if I remember correctly.
Right, right.
So that's pretty awesome, too.
So any zombie could turn into one of those?
I remember the normal zombies being able to turn into the Crimson Zombies. I don't know if anything else.
Yeah, that's like a whole new gameplay element that keeps it fresh. That's cool. Right.
Yeah.
That's the extra mile right there.
And my last example is of who has already done it well. I don't know if you guys will agree, but the new Mortal Kombat game, which is pretty much like the Star Trek of video games, because it's basically the same story as before, but at the same time, a reboot of the same story. So it has excellent graphics, same levels, even though it has new levels, and some of the same music. The characters are the same, but they're redesigned. They're no longer palette swaps. They no longer have the same movesets. And the combat is 2D instead of 3D, like in the last couple of games. And it just feels so much better. And the story is pretty cool, too, because it's the same story as in the first three games. But since you go back in time as Raiden and tell yourself that something happened in the future and Shao Kahn won, so you have to change some of the elements of the story. And, for example, one of the things that happens is one of the older characters gets turned into a cyborg instead of another character being turned into a cyborg. So it's pretty awesome. I'm not going to ruin it.
Only a few games come to mind when you mention this, and I try to think of what games have been done well. I don't think I've played that many remakes to really have an extensive opinion on this, but one that I've already mentioned is the Chrono Trigger for the DS.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was a really well done. I saw not a single flaw. It was a great experience, and I'm glad that I own it on a machine that I can play it regularly on without having to plug in a bunch of wires and a power cable and stuff. Another one that I don't know how much this is going to count for you guys, but when they released Metroid Prime 1 and 2 with motion control, mm-hmm. like I had paid $50 for Corruption, and then I paid $50 for the trilogy because having those games with, and then after that, I played all three immediately, one after another, but that alone was such an improvement on the old games, which were already impressive. So that too was a great remake, despite the particle effects that were missing, which I really don't give a single shit about. I don't understand why people cry so much about it. Yeah,
I didn't notice anything.
I didn't notice anything either.
Me either. I mean, I still had the badass ice gun, the ice blaster. Like, just because it didn't frost up as much or at all, like, I don't know. I wasn't losing sleep over it. But the one that really comes to mind right now that I played extensively is GoldenEye 007. Now, that I don't know if that's a reboot or a remake or whatever you want to label it as, but that was an example where they took the gameplay, shook it up, made it a little Call of Duty, like, I get that, but I still thought it was a very solid game, gameplay-wise, and it was, yeah, it still felt very N64-ish to me. In fact, I think when people referenced that, the gameplay was, oh, well, it was missing the N64 charm. Well, some of that charm was a lack of capability. I mean, the old-school 64 version is not perfect. I think it's aged pretty well, but it hasn't aged perfectly. And but the presentation was impressive. Like, I fell in love with GoldenEye 007 because of that. And as someone who, my favorite Bond movie, not because of the video game, but my favorite Bond movie in general is GoldenEye. And it was so cool to be able to literally play through that in a very faithful representation of it. And of course, there were discrepancies still, but it was the closest I'm ever going to get. And then the multiplayer, I thought, was very well done as well. And that, in a way, because multiplayer was so important in the 64 era with that game, that too could be judged for remake. And I think they did a great job with that. So that might be like my favorite remake in a long time.
I think one of my favorite remakes, though I haven't played the original, is Silent Hill Shattered Memories for the Wii.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I haven't played the original, but based on what I know, they really changed the level design and some of the story elements so that even if someone had played it already, there would be a lot of surprises like we had talked about in the Resident Evil remake. Yeah. So that's the kind of stuff I like too.
If Simbabad is to be trusted, he said basically that the whole idea that Shattered Memories was a remake was kind of a misdirection from like the PR department or something. And that, like, I guess this is a spoiler, but like, in fact, like, he thinks that it's a sequel to one of the endings of Silent Hill 2.
Really?
Oh.
So I have no idea what he means. I have like all the games downloaded on my PS3, or like I did find a copy of Silent Hill 2, mm-hmm. and I do have a copy of Shattered Memories that I haven't played because I'm a pussy. but one day I'll play those games and maybe I'll figure it out.
Yeah.
But I'll probably like play them in order, like the original, and then Silent Hill 2, and then Shattered Memories.
Maybe Eric can say if this is true. I think Shattered Memories also has a different element where at the beginning they ask you questions or something like that, and that plays into the story somehow.
Right, you're given like a quiz by your psychologist, and all your answers supposedly have an impact on what you're going to see and how the story changes. In fact, it kind of encourages you to replay the game several times just to see all those different permutations. So
this game is an example of me with Guy's opinion on remakes, because this was one of the few games where I've heard about the remake, and before I didn't care for the game, or I wasn't interested in it, partially because I didn't have a PlayStation growing up, but I just, it wasn't on my radar. But then when I heard about this, and I heard about all the new features they were adding to it, it mattered to me, and it was intriguing me. And I never did pick it up, unfortunately, but you guys are reminding me to get on that. I'm sure I could find a decent copy on Amazon or something. But, this is just an example of one of those games that I desperately want because the additions are so well done and well perceived by people who review them and whose opinions I have to trust.
Yeah, speaking of which, I think the second and third game are being re-released in HD collections.
Right.
Is that right?
But not the first one.
Not the first one. You can download it on the PSN, though, if you have one.
Yep.
Well, now, how was the motion control, or not the motion control, just like the Wiimote control in Shattered Memories? Because did that add to it? Because I would think that would be an appeal for me, just like it was with Metroid Prime.
The biggest addition, of course, is the infrared cursor. And yeah, actually, that really improves the game, in my opinion, because just like in Metroid Prime, it makes it much easier to navigate. And what I really liked about it, and this is something they did in games like No More Heroes, they used the Wii Remote speaker to add some elements of terror, because you can hear different sounds or
static, right?
Yeah, static. It acts like your cell phone. Your cell phone is a big part of the game, and you bring it up, it shows your map, and you can access your menu there. And sometimes you'll get these strange calls and videos on the phone, and you actually hold up this Wii remote speaker, and kind of creepy. So
yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
As for myself, like beyond the Resident Evil remake, I think one of the remakes that's done pretty well is Tomb Raider Anniversary. That's one of those games that I think was broken originally. Didn't control well, didn't look too good, and I don't know, lots of people liked it, but I definitely thought that it needed a remake for it to become enjoyable. And I think I mentioned that before on another podcast. Like, there's one change they made that I don't agree with, and it's they added like a quick time event when you first encountered the T-Rex.
Yes.
Yeah. And in the original, I think that it just popped out of nowhere, right?
Yeah, it popped out of nowhere, and you have to like hide in a cave to evade it.
That must have been a really like holy shit moment.
Yeah.
But the cutscene that precedes the quick time event is so, like, it telegraphs that moment so much that there's absolutely no tension. You know exactly when it's going to pop out. And that's just, maybe that's more a strike against QTEs than remakes, but...
Yeah, in the original, you have to evade it, and it takes so long to kill it. Mm. It's really challenging, but it's fun, but it's fun.
Okay, so what franchises need rebooting? This is pretty much going to go faster. I have three franchises that need rebooting. The first one is Tekken. And it's not because the gameplay is bad, it's just that the story is so stupid at this point that I think it just needs to go back to its roots. And my last series that I think needs either a major overhaul or a serious reboot is Animal Crossing. I mean, that's a game that pretty much every game in the series is just like baby steps, especially from the DS version to the Wii version. I don't know how the 3DS version is going to be, and I've seen a few changes, but I don't think it's going to be enough.
I think that they're taking greater strides than between the DS and the Wii. As much as a fan of the series I am, I was really disappointed with that, as I am publicly known to have that opinion. But, I mean, they're changing how the game's played from the start. Tom Nook is not even the same job anymore. Like, he has a whole different role. You have a whole different role. You're not limited with the ocean. You can actually swim in the thing. The map itself, the beach is bigger and takes up some of the bottom and some of the right or left side. So it's got a different dynamic. And I know that sounds silly. Like, anyone here who doesn't get Animal Crossing is probably thinking, what the fuck does that matter? You know, like, but at the same time, it does make a big difference. I mean, for instance, you spend a lot of time running along that stupid beach catching ocean fish. And so how that's designed is going to affect that gameplay. And if there's events to do on the beach, that's going to affect the gameplay as far as that goes, maybe different holidays or just interactions with your characters. But they also decided to change the animals up as far as, like, squirrels are actually small while bears are actually big. And they did very little of that before, but I guess they're making a real push for that.
I think we also need like a more community aspect to the game. Like, I don't think they would be able to do this in the 3DS version, but let's say they make a Wii U version. Just make it like an MMO, like an always there village where people can come in, you know, do stuff in your village, leave, and you don't necessarily have to be there. So you can interact with other people all the time.
And what'll be neat with the Wii U version is that now with the screen on your controller, I might actually have someone sitting on the couch with me actually being in the village at the same time I am. So there's
That's true.
Addition to communicate, you know. But are they going to notice that? I don't have the greatest faith in Nintendo with that series right now. Since I'm babbling anyway, I'll mention my two things really quick and then let you guys talk about this stuff. Two things that I think could see... three. I want to see more Mario Golf. I want them to really blow that out of the water, brawl it a little bit. But I know Camelot's busy with a lot of other things. And Wave Race, for some reason, we didn't get that with the Wii, and there's no handheld version. I think that that's a great series that never reached its full potential. But the main one that I... And we don't have to talk about this too much because I've talked about this series so much this podcast, Banjo-Kazooie. Mm-hmm. And even if it is a bit of a collectathon, I would love to see it. And, I mean, it's not going to end up on Nintendo's system, but... I'd buy it for my Xbox if I could. If an actual reboot of the series that has all the humor and charm and the platforming, because the platforming is really solid. It's a really solid series of games. The second one maybe stretched out a little too big, but even that was still a great game. So I think they could do that. And I mean, my dream would be for them to reboot that on the 3DS and have a like $50 cart which has the first two with like updated graphics or something on it, and then the third, like the whole trilogy. I'd pay like 50, I'd pay even maybe $60 for that, which maybe sounds silly, but I mean, if you can get the other ones for $10 and then a $40 3DS game, $60, fine, I'd pay for that. But I think that there's so much to be tapped out of the Banjo-Kazooie franchise that pretty much got thrown under the bus that you made in Nuts and Bolts.
No, I can't really think of any other franchises I'd want to see rebooted. I mean, one series I'd love to see come back, but this is more of a sequel. It's just F-Zero.
It's absolutely.
Yeah, it's been so long since we got that hardcore fast racing there, and you know, Amusement Visions did such an awesome job on the GameCube version.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we've been getting all these Mario Karts, and come back, we want to see F-Zero again. So
yeah, we need a 3DS version.
Yeah.
So bad. Yeah. So bad.
I think I came up with one series I'd like to see rebooted. What about Star Tropics?
Oh, yeah.
That could be badass. Just bring back Mike Jones and his yo-yo. Or his, what did they call it? A star? And just give it like great controls. Like keep it top down. Like maybe like a WiiWare remake, new graphics, perhaps, you know, better controls, because people really had complaints about that, the whole walking on the grid thing.
Mm-hmm.
But still, like, have something that controls better than its sequel. Because that game was really funny. It had, you know, a pretty good story for the time, but they could definitely like ramp up the craziness, and yeah, that could be a hit. I think, like, if it doesn't take itself too seriously and keeps the charm of the original, could be a great new adventure series. I mean something to go along Nintendo's currently alive series.
All right,
is the sequel any good?
I still haven't played it. I hope we're gonna have a retro game club at some point. Yeah. For it,
I voted for it, but it didn't get chosen.
We've had a discussion, a very calm and diplomatic and, you know, serene discussion where everyone agreed Nintendo's quality assurance was a model to follow. Well, no, like, actually, discussion didn't go like that. For some reason, apparently I'm crazy for this, but I thought that their QA was really, like, some of the best. And I quickly was told that, no, it's, like, very middle of the road. And, like, some good points were brought up. I mean, when I think of Nintendo games, I usually think of good controls, tight controls, characters that are perfectly adapted to the level design that's thrown at them, unlike the original Rayman, for example. And all these qualities, like, some people call it, like, polish, I guess. The fact that everything seems to fit, that everything seems to be designed very, very carefully. So perhaps it's that aspect of Nintendo design that led me to believe that their quality assurance was better than most. But it is true that recently Twilight Princess had like this game ruining bug where like you not only could not finish your game, but like you couldn't, if you had saved at a certain point, you couldn't leave, you couldn't go forward and you had to start over. And it was near the end of the game. So that could mean like dozens of hours of gameplay just lost that you had to, you know, do over.
Yeah.
So that was a pretty major bug.
Skyward Sword has one too, right?
Yeah, like pretty much exactly the same thing. Like 40 hours in or 30 hours in, I'm not sure. There's like a sequence of events that, you know, if you trigger it in the wrong order, then you're not going to be able to progress and you're not going to be, like, you're going to have to start over completely. So it's kind of insane that these two major problems passed through Nintendo's quality assurance. Yeah, I just want your opinion, you guys, on this. Like, do you think that Nintendo's games are usually perhaps like slightly above the rest when it comes to bugs. Like, do you even encounter a lot of bugs when you play games on other consoles or, you know, from other publishers?
I don't see bugs in general that often. Like, I don't know. I don't know if I'm oblivious or if the games I play are just pretty polished. But, I mean, maybe I'm just chill about this and I don't even notice when I've come across a bug. But Nintendo, there's no doubt about that it does do things very well. More often than not, they're very polished. They don't have these game-ending glitches. And even though two high-profile games have these glitches, in Skyward Sword, you have to do a bit more of a specific set of events. You can't just play the one area first and then, bam, it's screwed up. You have to talk to a guy and then you have to do this. However, I think that people, and I think this is what happened in that thread a little bit, and this might give me some heat, but it's so easy to bitch and latch on to, like, one or two specific instances. But when you look at those instances of a mistake, and, I mean, it is a bad mistake that they made, but how much of that fucking game is great? And how many things were done right? So if you look at if you weigh those things, how much was done correctly, and then how much was messed up, there's so much shit that was done wonderfully and was so well thought out. I mean, if all I have to do is play one area before the other, which I naturally did anyway because I just repeated the sequence I had done earlier in the game, that seemed pretty natural to me. I'm not sure where people get the idea to do that one area first in Skyward Sword, but you know, fair enough that they have the option and that can happen. But just like, okay, well, Other M, for instance, let's go to that. There was that door lock glitch. I mean, it is kind of weird that this is like the third. There's like been three high-profile games recently, so maybe there is an argument that they've gotten a little worse over the years. But even so, that's one door, and I mean they did fix the patch and everything, and in a little convoluted way. Like there could be an argument about how they handle it too. But if I look at my entire library, I've played so much fucking Nintendo without a problem that I think I can let them go with one, you know, error here and there. There's not a single Mario game I've ever had a problem with. They fucking rock. They do really well. As a developer, they're really solid. As a publisher, they do pretty well. I mean, I know Xenoblade is an issue, but I don't think that they. I think that they fuck up a lot less than people give them credit for, because it is fun to nitpick on the kid who's not seen as the cool kid.
I actually have three examples of games that I remember glitches in, or game ending glitches. The first one is Castlevania 64. For the 64. If I'm not mistaken, I think the Angry Video Game Nerd said that there was a point where if you didn't do a specific sequence of events, you were pretty much screwed.
I played it, but I didn't see it.
Okay, so I think that game has a game-ending glitch too. And two recent ones, Super Street Fighter 4 Arcade Edition. If you bought the disc, I bought the disc, and I had the previous two games on disc too. If you had any files from the previous games on your system, the game would reach the versus screen during your first fight and get stuck there. So what you needed to do was eliminate all the files from the first two games and just play the last game, because the last game has everything from the previous two games. And Mortal Kombat Trilogy on the PlayStation Network has horrible lag when playing online. And it has a lot of sound glitches. The European version just came out, and they fixed most of the problems, but the American version still doesn't have the patch yet. And going back to Nintendo, though, I think the biggest problem with Nintendo is that unlike the Xbox and the PlayStation 3, they can't really patch a game online. So they actually have to release a patch. You have to either send an SD card or get a download from them to the SD card and then put it into the system instead of just being able to download an updated version of the game. I think that's pretty much the worst part of the stuff.
And I think that's their main sin as far as QA is concerned. I think that they still, you know, the development of these games is still pretty spot on, pretty top notch, but they definitely are behind in the technology spectrum as far as that goes. I appreciate them this week announcing that they're going to let you send your, you know, memory or whatever. How are they doing that? I don't even know. But
SD card.
You put it on an SD card and then you transfer. Well, thank God you can even put it on your SD card, because I know that not all the games can be saved. But that's cool and all. But yeah, that's the fuck up right there. That's not. I mean, yeah, okay, I don't know. I'm going to get heat again for that. It is a fuck up that Skyward Sword is glitched. But again, it's more of a fuck up that they can't just simply fix it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Is that a Wii limitation, technical limitation, that they can't patch it, or is that something they just can't do?
Well, yeah, I guess it's like on the system level, like they don't have a way of patching games. Like I think perhaps like the I don't know what I'm talking about, but I mean like probably the executable file is on the disk, and there's not really a way to have the disk pay attention to something that's on the hard drive or the SD card if it's not meant to check.
Yeah.
So yeah, they simply don't have like the hooks in place to have the game look for a patch.
Yeah, and it might be too late in the game to do something to the system.
Yeah, like they talk about a program to fix your save. They never use the word patch ever because they probably can't patch it. It's not going to start a different version of the game. It's just that if you have a save file that's borked because of that glitch, then they can fix it.
Yeah, it's going to change like the 1 to a 0, wherever that code it is. But on the 3DS, I believe they can do that because we've gotten some games recently that, I forgot where I read this, but we got I think it was Pushmo. Pushmo had an update to it that allowed for QR code sending of puzzles and stuff, which wasn't in the original Japanese release like a few months ago. But they easily just patched it up, and we, of course, got the full version because it was ready by then.
Yeah, but I don't think that it's a built inside the system. I think it was built inside the game, right? Perhaps like they had planned to add these things, but they didn't have the time, so they programmed the hooks to add this stuff later on, and then they added it. Because if you recall, like there was like this, at some point there was an update for the 3DS, and all of a sudden people who played, I think it was either Ridge Racer or Ghost Recon, all of a sudden like there were glitches. And they didn't patch the game, they patched, like they sent another firmware update. I think that the problem really is like at the system level.
Yeah.
If they want games to be patchable, then that capability has to be programmed in the game.
They had need to set up that infrastructure in the first place, and you know, hopefully that's something they'll do with the Wii U.
Like it's the same thing as with the whole multiplayer features, right? Like now we can have like these friend lists on playing Mario Kart, and we can join a game that's in progress and everything. But the previous multiplayer games don't have that capability patched in. I don't know how Street Fighter 4 worked on 3DS, but like that hasn't changed. It hasn't been patched. It's still the same system that it used to when it launched.
So in other words, for Nintendo to really, you know, knock it out of the park with Wii U, they have to have something in place day one that any game can tap into immediately.
Yeah, I think they have to make their operating system more flexible, I guess. I have no idea what I'm saying. But I think that, you know, like obviously like Microsoft is capable of changing their interface to a vast extent, and they can add functionalities, and they're not afraid to do so, as we've seen with the recent dashboard update. But Nintendo simply, it looks like they don't have that capability.
Do you think that with Sony and Microsoft being, you know, computer companies or technology companies before they were console companies, that that gave them an edge in terms of understanding that?
I think Microsoft probably knew a thing or two about updating soft, you know, like operating systems and all that stuff. I'm sure that Microsoft is probably the company that has the best system in place, and they're a software company, an operating system company, and I'm sure that helped them greatly.
Right.
Sony is not that good. Like they can have firmware updates, but it's super clunky, and you have to download them and then install them separately. Like it's kind of a mess.
And it takes a long while.
Yep. But yeah, like let's hope that Wii U improves on that and that Nintendo has learned its lessons. But I want to point out with the whole like QA thing, the Nintendo polish, like I don't think it's unjustified to say that Nintendo has a you know, better quality assurance than most other companies, because there's so many times when like perhaps I don't encounter bugs all that often, like actual bugs in games, but I will have like janky stuff, like janky as hell in well-regarded games. For instance, like pretty much all of the Sony platformers from last generation. I know that in Jak and Daxter, sometimes like I would jump, like the double jump wouldn't always work. And that was totally, like all the time I felt it was like the game's fault and not my own. or in like both that game and Ratchet and Clank, there were a lot of structures that you could jump on, but you weren't meant to jump on them. And so like the game just thought that you were floating in midair and would try to push you back inside the level. And you just don't find that kind of stuff in like a Nintendo game ever.
What's impressive about that too, if you look at these catalogs, is because Nintendo is not just a publisher or a console developer, but they are a game developer. So they produce a lot of games under their umbrella. Jak and Daxter, you know, I don't know who made that, but that's the one company. And then you have this other company that makes a similar kind of mess up. And so if you see a lot of different games on, you know, the PlayStation 1 or the 2 or the 3 or whatever, you're going to find that it's a bunch of different companies making all these big Fs. And if you look at it in terms of quantity versus like overall quantity or something, like the amount of fuck-ups per games produced, I think that's another example of where you're going to find Nintendo does pretty well. And I think it's easy to look at Nintendo and say, oh, look how many more things they have. It's because they have so many more games than any one developer.
Well, Nintendo, though, is like several studios, right? So it's kind of the same thing, isn't it? Like, they've got several studios working on several projects. They're just not different developers. They're all Nintendo, but...
But I still feel like there's a quality control that would be monitored by the same overall person. I mean, I know it's not like there's one guy who oversees everything. But like, you've got Miyamoto looking over a shit ton of games. He's one guy, you know? And maybe they have, I guess maybe you could consider that its own company too, but Iwata, he also looks over these games. He's a developer himself, which I think is a great thing for that company when he took over, that an actual developer became the president of the company. And so he's got a sensibility, and I guarantee that he doesn't look at a game, or he doesn't let a game release without him looking at it, you know? Well, you're not going to find that same kind of quality by the same person over. So I don't know, maybe you can look at Iwata and chew him out if people have a problem with Nintendo's quality assurance these days, because he's essentially the man who lets everyone out. I see what you're saying, and you are kind of making me eat my shoe, because you do have a point. But I think with Nintendo being such a big company, there is a difference there.
There's one last point that I wanted to make. People brought up the fact that, you know, like Skyrim might be buggy as hell and have like dragons that fly backwards and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And dead people at weddings, and I don't know, I haven't played it. Yeah, but I have played Fallout 3, though, and like people, like their arguments seem to be like, oh, of course, like Skyrim has bugs, but it's acceptable or it's more understandable because that game is so much more complex than a Nintendo game. And I thought that was really like diminishing Nintendo's accomplishments. Like if Nintendo's games were that simple, wouldn't all the companies that try to emulate them do as well? Because like I don't see that happening. Like, I praised Rayman Origins earlier for being basically like Donkey Kong Country Returns, but there's, you know, there's something about the floaty controls and some of the elements of the level design that I don't find quite up to par. It's a very, very, very good game, but I don't think they've reached quite that Nintendo quality that they were talking about. But more to the point, I agree that perhaps in terms of technical complexity, Nintendo's games are simpler than something like Skyrim. But there is complexity in other ways, though, like in the level design itself or in the game structure itself. I mean, like, think of all different actions that you could do in Super Mario Galaxy. And then all different actions that were completely different in Super Mario Galaxy 2. Like, each stage seemed to reinvent the game. And that's, you know, like, every time you had seen, like, you thought you had seen everything, and then the next level would throw a curveball at you, and you were just like, wow, I can't believe that they managed to take these gameplay mechanics and do something so completely different with them. Whereas, like, okay, like, the Skyrim world is huge, and there's tons of lore, and there's tons of... You know, like, I'm sure that engine is, like, crunching a lot of numbers, and I'm sure that these environments were really took a lot of time to design, a lot of people to design them. But if it's anything like Fallout, once you've picked a lock, you've pretty much picked all the locks. Like, there's nothing different. Like, every action that you can do, there's never going to be a curveball thrown at you. There's never going to be like, oh, wow, like there's a locked door there. Like, how do I get to it? How do I pick it? And, you know, like, I'm sure it's going to be like worth it, what's inside. Like, you never No, like you're just going to level up, and if the door is pickable at this the lock is, you can pick that lock at that level, then you're going to pick it. And there's no complexity in gameplay here. But Nintendo, like they could like take that lock and make a mini game, and then take another lock and completely blow your mind with a new puzzle. But anyway, like maybe like am I giving them too much credit or what? Like am I not giving other games enough credit?
No, I mean, you make a good point. One thing I will say this about the Skyward Sword thing, that is pretty ugly though. I mean, even though there's only like a handful of ways. It's not like there's a billion ways to tackle that sequence of events. So it is pretty fishy that that came out. But that's like one of the worst examples. Very few examples go as far as that. And as far as Nintendo games being intricate, I mean, fuck yeah, they are. I mean, like look at Brawl. How many combinations of characters, items, levels, songs even can cause a glitch, you know? And yet, look how great that game runs, except online.
Yeah, but then you'll have people point out that the game is unbalanced.
But in a way, like, is that not a little bit subjective? Because I find the game to be just fine, but I don't play it to a level that other people do. And you'll have, I mean, it's like with snaking. Does snaking, you know, unbalance Mario Kart? I believe so, but it doesn't. Some people embrace it as a well-intentioned tactic.
Right.
So, I mean, I don't know. You're going to have someone complaining about one thing, but then loving the shit out of snaking because they can abuse that. So that's another thing too. Glitches aren't so like glitches are embraced sometimes. What is it? Sequence breaking, like in Metroid Prime, when you can make that one jump to that ledge, and then you can pretty much bypass all this shit without even having to get the space boots and everything. People like that
Right.
stuff. Or when at the same time, that's kind of that's just as in my opinion, that's just as bad as any other glitch, except for the fact that it doesn't break the game because you can always go back and get stuff. Those are the glitches that really matter. And unfortunately, Nintendo has had a few too many of those lately. But if you look at their entire library, it's very, very small.
And getting
So.
back to what you were saying, complexity of what they do correctly, and Skyward Sword is a good example of just all the different ways that it uses motion control or Wii Motion Plus, the way they implemented that in every item, every movement, and it all works pretty much flawlessly. That's just one good example of how much polish, as we were calling it, there really is in that game.
Yeah, and like you really have to think about the fact that they were exploring new territory here. I don't think any other game as ambitious as Skyward Sword were exploring motion controls as thoroughly as that game did.
Right.
And like it's kind of a Mario 64 situation. Like they were basically creating a new like gameplay language all the while. Like they not only like they innovated and succeeded, but like they did it well. Usually when a game innovates, you have to wait for the sequel to have the good game
Right.
made with those innovations.
And so, okay, Nintendo fucks up, you know, because they overlooked something here when they were rocking the shit out of Motion Plus. You know, I was too busy not caring about that thread too much because I was fucking beating down a giant monster with my fucking sword, and I was using my actual arm. You know, I was bowling bombs, and like that sounds ridiculous, but it was freaking awesome, and it worked. God forbid that they have a glitch in a Nintendo game or two, and they still offer to fix it. You know, I mean, even though it's not ideal, at least they're doing it, so it's not the end of the world, and it's such a good game. Like, I'm sorry for anyone who got messed up and has to restart, but is it that big of a punishment to have to replay an awesome game? You know, there's worse things in life to complain about, and people spend too much time fucking bitching about this. That's my two cents.
Yeah, and the whole like bowling bombs thing, like that's a great example of like that Nintendo touch that no one seems to, give enough credit to, I feel. Because like if that were Skyrim, like you would press a button and lay a bomb, and that would be it.
Right.
It's hard for me to compare to what the other developers or systems do because I don't have much experience playing the non-Nintendo consoles. But just based on what I hear, and not just from you guys, but from other message boards, I really do see Nintendo having that, you know, extra attention to detail and making sure every little detail is works perfectly. So in the overall view of the situation, I think they do an excellent job, and whenever things like this happen, these game-breaking glitches that people find, it is unfortunate, but there's not a perfect company. And I think what they do right is just, or basically what these glitches that they found get blown out of proportion. And I honestly don't know anyone who has run into it personally. So is it that big of a problem? I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'd probably be pissed off if I had run into that glitch.
Yeah.
But none of the people who were debating in that thread had run into it. So
I'm so lucky I'm at the first temple yet, so I can download the patch.
Oh.
Yeah, but going back to it, though, I think Nintendo's a great company in that, it, like Eric said, they pay a lot of attention to detail. For example, whenever I play a Mario game, I know it's going to have great physics. I know that jumping is going to be perfect. Whenever I play a Zelda game, I know the hit detection with the sword or the arrows are going to be perfect. Whenever I play Mario Kart, I know the cars are not going to be floaty like in the kart game for the PS3. I forget the name. Nation Racers.
Oh, yeah, with the minute-long load times.
Yeah, exactly. So Nintendo has like a perfect thing for physics that I don't think anybody else can do. I don't think anybody has been able to accomplish what they have done. Another example of horrible physics is Little Big Planet. Whenever you jump in that game, so floaty, it just made me want to like return the game.
It's like they tried too hard to make it ultra-realistic physics or something.
Exactly. I don't find it as fun to play as a Super Mario game.
But people praise the physics in that game, don't they? I've never played it personally. I've seen it, and it just looks floaty just looking at it. But
well, it depends on your priorities. Like, I don't think that the physics are really that big a flaw in that game. Like, some people do like it. It does add an element of unpredictability, and you have to figure how to do things in different ways sometimes. So I'm all for that. I think there's other bad decisions, design decisions that they can be blamed for, though, like the three planes thing, where you can be in the background or middle or foreground, and it doesn't work. It just doesn't work most of the time. So that's the end of the podcast. Thanks for listening, people. We would really, really like you to comment on what you've heard, like those two people who actually noticed that the host was different. Do like those guys and comment on negativeworld.org. Just find the thread that's probably going to be on the first page. There's going to be a thread where you can leave your comments. You have to subscribe, of course, to Negative World. If you don't want to do that, you can reach us through the Facebook page. Just search for negativeworld.org. Or you can reach us on Twitter at @negative_world and leave your 140 characters of comments there. Yeah, so while we have Eric and Sam here, I just want to say that we've got tons of great content on Negative World, and these two guys are certainly like two of the most prolific writers. There's some really, really, you know, incredible articles that you can find under their names. For instance, well, Eric recently talked about his love for Nintendo music, and you can see his impressive collection of soundtracks. Go read that, and like perhaps some of you also have like some nostalgia for Killer Cuts or some of those other soundtracks and from Nintendo Power.
Yep.
Sam has been a little bit more quiet lately, but he's got tons of top tens or like reviews for Castlevania games. Is there still one coming up?
Actually, there are two coming up. Yeah, one for Portrait of Ruin and one for Order of Ecclesia. It's just that, as you all know, I've been a little bit busy these past few weeks.
Yeah, of course, of course. But yeah, and like those are always full of trivia and extremely lengthy and detailed.
Yes.
So if you want to sit down and read for a while, definitely check them out. Thank you, Steven, Sam, and Eric, for doing this with me.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you again, people, for listening, and see you in 2 weeks.
See ya. Bye-bye.
Later.
Maybe I'll do that. Am I alone? I think I am. Gee's gonna have a fun time listening to that. But yeah, I mean, that's all I gotta say. I just wanted to gush a little bit about those particular games and the winter theme and all that. So if you guys have nothing more to say, then we can, you know, we can ice this and move on.
Oh, yeah, that's gonna get cut.
What? Better not.
Well, we could probably end it there. Like, I should probably go to bed, or...
That's right.
Actually, I'm lying. I'm probably going to go get a poutine.
What is a poutine? What is everyone talking about, this poutine?
Well, you know, it's good. It's bad for you, but it's a good junk food to get when you're hungry and it's late.
I keep thinking of poontang when people say poontang.
Yeah, it's, not really.
It could also be a good late-night activity snack, you know.
Yeah, sure.
Hey, I'm just saying.
You're going to have to come to Montreal to find out what the poutine is. And maybe poontang, but I'm not promising anything.
I want both simultaneously.
That's disturbing.
Poutine-tang.
Oh, God.
I'm sure in Japan that's all the rage.
Of course. Was it everything that you guys had dreamed of?
Actually, I would have hoped to be able to say physics well, at least once. Physics.
No one has ever mispronounced any word on this podcast before.
Yeah.
This is a first.
Yes.
Is there winter music in Rayman Origins to tie those two together?
Maybe I haven't gotten to that point yet. Like, I'm in the fourth world out of 10. I've really been taking my time with it. Like, at first, I actually tried to get, like, every possible achievement or, like, whatever you want to call them, right. Like, the medals and time trials, and then only last night did I decide, like, okay, I'm going to run through the game once, and then I'm going to come back for all the rest of that crowd. Yeah. So, like, I managed to knock out, like, 3 worlds in one night when I had been playing maybe, like, 1 stage per day before that. But yeah, I don't know. Like, the world so far have been pretty close to, like, the ones in the original game, actually. Okay. Like, it starts in the jungle world, and then it's a musical instrument world. And now I'm in a food-related world. No, that was before. Like, it was all, like, forks and, it's pretty weird.
Okay.
And there was, like, Mexican music playing in the Inferno level with, like, Chili Peppers taking baths and really, really weird. And, I think I just finished a water-based level, which also has... Oh, yeah, I'm definitely using that game's music. Yeah.
All
right. Well, I'm listening. And, right now I'm on YouTube looking it up, and it seems like it's later in the game, but it is kind of like a level that could relate to our topic. The music doesn't really fit, but the level sure does.
That really doesn't surprise
me. You said
that the music doesn't fit.
You said the Mexican theme or like the Spanish theme, like that kind of sound. Yeah, this sounds like that. Like, I'm looking at Ice right now, and
I've played through that. Yeah, okay. Like, it's you start out in a freezer or something, and then you go inside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's no jingle bells here, but there's definitely, like, I'm in the mood to samba.
Right. Yeah. Awesome.
But this game looks kind of fun.
Yeah, no shit.
Well, that was very matter of fact.
Well, I did a poor job trying to sell it, but I mean, like, come on, like, who hears Who here is like DKCR, you know, like it's like a sequel to that game and doesn't want that game? Like I was expecting a bigger reaction from you guys.
I don't know. I must have just not clicked on that because I love DKCR.
Yeah, me too.